Let me tell you why you're here.
You have 210 stories.
What truth?
Office buildings.
We just witnessed some kind of...
You don't find a desk.
Secondary.
You don't find a chair.
Follow-up explosion on the World Trade Center.
You don't find a telephone.
Some kind of explosion. A lot of smoke come out of the
110 stories high. They are no longer there.
The building collapsed to dust.
To dust. To dust. To dust. To dust. To dust. To dust. This is your last chance.
I would ask.
After this, there is no turning back.
Once all the facts are out.
You take the blue pill.
For your understanding.
The story ends.
And for your forgiveness.
You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want.
Media is the...
You take the red
nervous pill. System of a democracy.
You stay in Wonderland.
If it's not functioning well, the democracy can't function.
And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
The democracy can't pill. Function.
The red pill.
Take the red pill.
You have to let it all go.
Take the red pill.
Fear.
9/11truth.org.
Doubt.
WhatReallyHappened.com.
You just believe.
WTC7.net.
Free your mind.
Take the red pill.
Okay, let's do this.
Broadcasting from the basement of the science building.
I gotta get that drop. It's a Cheech and Chong bit. Welcome to Dangerous Conversation. Tuesday night, we get together at RazRadioLive.com or the,
is it, let me see, TF52.com.
I know it's the first 52 letters and something, but it just freaks me out. I'm like, always have to try to remember that website. As promised last week, and we had a little issue with this software, but I am a firm believer that sooner or later you're going to see real good, high-quality, not tonight, real good, high-quality broadcasts with many, many people scattered across the country. Now, people have been taking advantage of Skype. It's not a two-way medium like cell phones. It's only one person can hear each other at the same time. We're using this mumble software. It's not visual in nature. It's simply auditory. But I have kind of a goal for both nights of DC, and that includes, you know, the actual conversation in the word. Now, just started booking guests right after the holidays. Everybody was hard to track down, and we will start bringing guests to the platform. But if you remember, when I launched this on IO a couple years back, I built a crew, a bunch of people with great opinions, intellect, sense of humor, a little bit of everything. And we get to do it tonight. We get to play. So without further ado, let me pot up my mumble and see if you guys are there. Are you guys there?
Yes, sir.
Yes, we are.
Ladies and gentlemen, I feel like we should do like a wrestling intro for each one. Wait a minute. Dog needs to go out.
Hang on. Live ready. All right, baby. You got it.
Ladies and gentlemen, from somewhere in New York, a man who will always tell you what he's thinking, especially when he's hanging in Ybor City and talking to lesbians at 4 in the morning. It is the one and only Ferris!
You know, I wasn't sure that was me until you got to lesbian.
Yeah. I wasn't there that night, but I do know. What was the infamous phrase that she kept asking you?
What are your prospects?
Yes. You're like drunk, leaning up against a building, and this woman's looking down on you. And she goes, "What are your prospects? What are your prospects?"
Exactly.
Like that?
She had Jim J. Bullock's haircut, and she's going to ask me what my prospects are.
Hey, you know, nice flat top. Where are we? The 50s? Yeah. Ben Carsley is the real moniker. Good to talk to you, man. I saw you a couple weeks ago at Shea Ledge. We watched a little pigskin. We watched both our teams win, actually, that day, correct?
Everybody's team won except for mine, Ledge. We lost in overtime to the Jets.
That's right. That's what it was. I think it was the Bucks' final win of the season. I think it was. Because then they lost four straight.
Even the Dolphins won.
I know. Sucky. And I was going to say, you know, my second intro is from the same sucky state as Ferris. Dave Cunningham, Dave, and Dave is the hub for what we're doing here tonight on Mumble. The neat thing about Mumble is all of us can hear each other. And yes, definitely, you know, if you need to interject, someone's going to hear you. That's the issue with Skype. That
right,
a lot
I
can of people,
talk right over you and everyone
exactly.
hears it.
Yeah, and you did a good job of that last week, too, by the way. Yeah. Did an excellent fucking job. Hint, hint. No, I'm just kidding. It is uncensored. Some people drop an F-bomb every 10th word. Some people go every 100 words. Dave's about every 5th. Every 5th or 6th word?
Hey, I am A, from Brooklyn. B, I used to be a truck driver. So it's in the contract that I have to curse every other second.
Okay. All right, cool. Absolutely. Oh, shit. Hang on a second. So I haven't talked to you guys doing radio in a while, and Dave and I had kind of a fun time last week, Ferris. I'm going to call you Ferris, you know, because you're Ferris to me. And I wanted fun. To just kind of go in tonight and just pick. I got some audio we can play, and I got some fun stuff, and I got a little edgy stuff, and whatever you guys feel like, you know, pick two or three topics, anything you feel like hitting on tonight for sure. Are you guys hearing me good?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everything sounds good on your end?
It does.
Okay, good. I'm just, you know, I got three things up and running here. I've got, oh, crap. Just hang on a second.
I've got two things up and running right now.
No, I use a set.
I've got one thing up and running.
Yeah. I've got like, I don't know how many different softwares that I use now. I use Mumble right now. Then I also use the Butt software on Raz Radio. And then I use Mixler Premium on my Wednesday night show over at Radio Influence, okay? Mm-hmm. So I accidentally opened that, so then I have to close that. There we go. Cool. All right, so test 1, 2. Everything's good. I got to turn you guys up a little bit, make sure you sound good and loud. Go ahead, give me a 1, 2, 3.
1, 2, 3.
1, 2, 3.
All right, good. Good. first of all, Dave, you don't know anything about football, right?
Nothing.
Nothing. So... So do you know what it would mean if a kicker missed a kick at the end of a game?
No, but I got all the Laces Out references on Facebook.
A chip shot. Not even. It was closer than an extra point.
I know.
It was closer than the old original extra point, I think.
Yeah, well, the ball used to be on the 2 for the extra point. So you a 7-yard snap. I think it was kicked from 9 yards back, making it a 19-yard field goal or extra point. I think this one was 27 yards. This was 27 yards. Did you guys see him? Because I want to play a little of this audio here. Oh, man, I got so many windows open here. I don't even, there we go. I think I got it. Hang on. I've got so many things open up. I'm just afraid my computer's going to lock up on me here. Did you guys see the video of the pissed off Vikings fans?
No.
Oh, they're beautiful. You know, like everybody's got phones now. So everybody at a crucial moment in a game, what do? You get a little selfie going. Yeah, there's the game going on behind me. I'm going to film myself. This celebration's going to be awesome. I'm going to put it up on Facebook and everything. And then the guy misses the kick. And while some of this is visual, you can't see all of it. That's the problem. They're my favorites, and I'll put this up on Twitter. I think I already did, but just in case I didn't, I'll repost it on Twitter. My favorite Ferris is actually someone walks into a bathroom, you know, like they're filming with their phone, and you see Minnesota Vikings towels, you see a Minnesota Vikings shower curtain, okay. You see a Minnesota, what's the little thing you step out on when you're wet?
Bath mat?
Yeah. Everything in the bathroom is Minnesota Vikings, right? So I'm thinking, okay, this guy's going to, you know, oh, I see what they're doing. They're kind of, you know, all of a sudden, whoever you see this hand reach out and open up the shower curtain, and there's a man in there sitting in the tub, no water in the tub, and he's literally, I'm not kidding, he's got half a bottle of vodka done. And he's sitting in the tub getting shit-faced. Now, you don't see that one because, you know, some of these are just the first one. God, I've got so many windows open here. Damn it. Damn it. Damn it. Let me try this again. Let me scroll down. I might have scrolled by it. I know. I posted Vikings reactions. Talks amongst yourselves. I'm feeling verklempt. Boy.
Boy. So I don't have things set up. I got to actually play my own sounds over this, but I can't do it because I don't have things set up correctly.
Well, you know, that's the thing about me. I post so many things that, you know, when I want to go back and find the specific thing I've posted, then I got to go back and go, okay, that's not it, that's not it, that's not it, that's not it, all the way down. Well, while I'm scrolling, Dave, we were just before we took to the airwaves, I had to tell you that I had a run-in with your favorite people in the world, and that is the police, the po-po. Now, you guys already know the scenario, so I can't ask you, but what would you do if you're standing at a lake fishing with your dog and you turn around and there's three cops behind you? Sir, may I see your ID, please? Now, what do you think is going to happen?
What would I do?
Yeah. What would
I would say, am I legally required to show you my, is that a legal,
would you get all lawful, Fourth Amendment? Would you get all Fourth Amendment on him?
Absolutely. Are you suspecting me of committing a crime? Because you don't have to have ID on you when you're not driving a car.
Okay. So you know what I would do is I would say, hello, officer. Here's my driver's license. I'm just here with my dog having a good time. I'm not Dave Cunningham, so don't worry. I'm not going to be in jail.
That's why I'll be in jail and you won't. That's why I'll be calling you for bail money.
Right. I'm not saying it's right. I shouldn't have to do that, but I will.
Right. Well, somebody's got to stand up for their rights.
Yeah, well, jail sucks.
Yeah, well, you know, being oppressed sucks as well, you know.
But I'm still going to be oppressed even after you get out of jail.
Yeah, well, here's the thing: I'll take it. I'll be like, hey, let's take it to court. You know, I've already beaten two tickets just by trying to take it to court.
Are you seriously pulling the "I got nothing else to do" officer?
Well, that used to hold true. I do work part time now, and they kind of need me, so I can't be pulling that crap anymore. But
yeah, you're like, officer, is there night court?
Well, I would say, what do you need my ID for? You know, that would be the first thing. Seriously, like, what do you need?
I can appear Wednesday through Friday after 4:30 p.m.
I would say to them, my name. I'd say, what is this? Honestly, this is what I would do. What is this in reference to? Why do you need to see my ID? And if they said to me, well, you're not supposed to fish here from.
Well, he didn't say that. He said there's no fishing allowed. Now I'm talking about good old Lake Crescent Park here in St. Pete. I've been fishing it for about a year now.
And Dave books court dates like they're a tea time.
I'm busy on Tuesday. Maybe we can get in a quick 9 on Wednesday. It turns out that you can fish there, but you cannot fish there. You can fish from Memorial Day to Labor Day. That's it. Summertime. And I didn't see that. All I knew was I looked it up and said, yeah, you can fish. I got a license, Dave. Now, are you pissed at me because I have a fishing license? Because I have a freshwater, saltwater fishing license for Florida.
I'm not pissed at you for having a license. I'm pissed for the fact they say, you can't do this unless you pay me money and we give you this piece of paper. Now you can do it. You know, and not only that, you know, 100 years ago, that's how people ate, is they fished and they hunted. Now you have to have licenses to get to go fishing or to go hunting. But you don't have to have a license to go to the supermarket. What the fuck's up with that? Oh, excuse me.
Well, they've got quotas. For instance, Dave, let's say I was a starving guy and I had a little cane pole and a string and a little bobby pin and a worm on it. And I caught a bass, but it was 11 inches long and I was starving and I wanted to take it home and eat it. Mm-hmm. That would be illegal because the fish has to be at least a foot long.
Yeah. What's up with that? You know?
Well, that's to keep the population of bass or fish at a healthy level.
No, that's to control you. And this is also for recreational fishing. I can understand if somebody was out there catching fish all the time and selling it as a business. Then you could regulate that. But don't regulate, you know, person fishing for food. Especially since most of the fishing today is catch and release.
Well, that's all I do. I do it to get out in nature and get assaulted, not assaulted, but hassled by cops. I have to admit, though, they were nice. The two just stood there. The other two, there's three of them. Mm-hmm. And I go, wow, I rated three police officers. I used the word officer instead of cop. You know, I was trying to be nice. And she goes, oh, 2.5. I'm in training. So she's riding along with these other two.
Oh, she's learned how to hassle people. Great.
Yeah, yeah. Well, she had the uni on, but she wasn't packing a gun. The other two had guns. So I don't know if she's like, learning. here we go. I finally found the fucking video. Oh, don't you dare.
And all right, so just to make this story even better, if you Google where Crescent Lake Park is in St. Pete, it's kind of at the edge of a not so great neighborhood. But yet they're harassing you because you're fishing in there at a time when they say you can't fish there.
Yeah.
But yet there's probably all kinds of stuff. I could probably run a police blotter thing about the crimes that were in that area at the time that you were there. And I'll bet you there's some violent crimes that went on within a half hour each way of you.
Well, yeah, you don't know that. But, you know, I get, you know, and that's what I was thinking. Ferris, I'm like, okay, bite your tongue. Let them say what they got to say. I even showed him that I had Googled, you know, the lake. I found it on my searches. And, I said, you know, I looked this up, and it said that I could fish here. And then all he does, and I swear to God, I'm fishing for bass in these lily pads. And 5 feet to my left is a sign that says no fishing. I was like, all he did, I was like, okay, you know, I Googled this and the St. Pete Chamber of Commerce and, the places you could bass fish in Pinellas County. And I did. I'm not lying. And it said Crescent Lake, you know, 22nd Avenue and 5th Street in St. Pete. But what I didn't see was it's only Memorial Day through Labor Day. So you're only allowed to fish there in the summertime. So, you know,
hey,
all
Scott,
he did was point at that sign, Dave.
I could barely
and he didn't
hear
say
you.
Anything. Hello?
You're cutting out. You were cutting out.
Now everything's good on my end.
All right.
I'm hearing a boom, boom, boom. I'm hearing like a...
Yeah, hold on. I think it's Ben. I'm going to mute him for a second.
Yeah, it's Ben.
Yeah, it's Ben.
Ben sounds like he got a ceiling fan going or something.
Yeah, I think it's his... No, he doesn't have the ceiling fan going. I think it's his mic is too hot. Because remember, the whole time...
It might be feeding
show,
back.
Was...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So right, turn him back on.
Learn.
Turn him back on.
All right.
It's kind of like an alien spaceship. Crazy.
Ben, for giggles, just mute. Hit your do the mic thing on your board. Just shut it off. Yeah, see?
So that is coming from his microphone?
I guess. Put it back on here. And lower it?
This is called working out of the bugs. Working out the bugs.
You know, maybe the gain.
It's really, really low.
All right. Well,
that's
now it's
better.
Gone. Can you speak?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear better.
It's gone now.
The whoop-whoop's gone.
Yeah, it's kind of a...
I think Ledge is gone now, though.
No, I'm not. I'm right
it's
here.
It's me and you. Oh, there
right
you
here. All right, here we go. Oh, this is a bigger...
So anyway, Ledge was fishing in a crack-selling zone. Is that what we were saying?
That's what I was inferring, yeah.
I am literally... I am thinking... That's the thing that everybody thinks. When you get hassled by a cop or three cops because you're fishing or your dog's not on the leash. You know, GT, she doesn't go 3 feet from me unless she has permission, right? But I'm at this park, and everyone's walking by, and here I am wearing my... I'm wearing camos. I'm looking pure redneck with a fishing pole and a lab. And I'm thinking, all right. And they're looking me up and down. And I'm thinking, bite your lip. Don't say that. Don't say, oh, by the way, I think a couple streets over, you can buy some great fucking meth. You know, I didn't want to be that guy. But inside, I was seething. I was like, you know, here I am, not bothering anybody. Someone with no life calls the cops on me. Think about the person that called the cops.
Well,
there's a man fishing over there with a dog, and it's not on its leash. What the hell's our world turning into? You know, I can just
picture
that
person. Probably the PTA president.
Oh, yeah. Or the most uptight old lady who needs to get laid somewhere in that vicinity. Maybe someone who walked right by me. You know, everybody's got a cell phone.
Did they say that they had a complaint?
Yes, they said someone called us.
I'll bet you that's a lie.
No, there's no way they could have seen me. I mean, where their cop car had to drive by, I was down on a bank. You really have to look hard to see me from where I was to where the street was. Because I, you know, I'm not saying they didn't, but they pulled in and they said someone called in a complaint that you were fishing and your dog was not on a leash. So if my dog's not on a leash, that's got to be someone walking right by me to see that.
Right.
Okay, that's not someone, you know, like, you know, 800 yards away looking out their window. So someone with a cell phone in that park, some uptight whoever, decided they were going to call 911 because a man was – I know, Ferris, this is why I was seething.
There's a man with a fishing pole.
Man, doesn't he realize that you can't use rubber worms this time of season? What the hell's wrong with people?
Hey, guess where that won't happen? Honduras.
Oh God.
Yeah, I'll just like get clubbed and wake up without a kidney or something. You know,
That's only if you're doing it in Tegucigalpa or San Pablo Sula.
You getting over an infection won't happen in Honduras either.
No, you don't. You can actually
or
go
getting
to
rid of no healing from dysentery won't happen there either.
You are so wrong. Guess what? You can go to the pharmacy and get drugs without a prescription. So there.
Okay, have fun with your 1955 aspirin.
Cuba. Do I have to boil my water when I'm living in Honduras by any chance?
Yeah, probably.
I can't eat the fish I catch?
Well, not unless you boil it.
Yeah. All right.
There are some negatives to it.
So I get in the car, you know, and I'm driving. Hang on a second. I'm feeding back a little bit here. Let me turn my headphones down. As I work out the kinks here, I'm driving, you know, I get back in the I got to walk all the way back. I have her water dish. I always bring her water dish and a jug of water because we play, you know. I throw her toy and she fetches, and then when she's tired, I fish for 20 minutes. You know, it goes back and forth. So I have this dish, I have my tackle box, I have the reel, I have her leash, I have her toy, and I feel like, you know, I mean, Steve Martin gets evicted. You know, and he's walking down the street, and he's got like three things, and he's trying to hang on to all of them at the same time.
My remote control.
Yes.
I don't need you. I got this book and this chair.
I'm like walking back to my truck, and everybody's looking at me. Look at that. That they shamed that man, and I'm like, I'm just like, and we got to remember now. I have to have a GT on the leash. So she's thinking, oh, you know, I've got a 200-yard walk back to my car. She's thinking, oh, I'm carrying the toy. So what is she doing? She's running around me with her leash and tying me up. And I'm trying, and I'm like, oh, God, I can't unhook her because she'd be off the leash. It took me 20 minutes.
He said, tie up and hook her.
I know. Tie up and hook her in the same sentence. And I absolutely, I finally made it back to the car. So by the time I get my, you know, my fishing gear in the back of the truck, I get her up there. I put all her stuff in the back seat. So it sits there, the extra leash, the toy, the water dish, all that shit. And I get in the truck and I slam the door, and the cop is like five cars in front of me. And there you can see the three of them start to get in their car, and they're getting ready to pull away. And I'm fucking seething. I'm just like, I can't. And it had nothing to do with, you know, I'm not embarrassed. I mean, you know, whatever, a bunch of people see me and cops talking to me because I'm fishing or something. Half of them are saying the same thing we're saying. Are you kidding me? The cops are, you know, going after some guy who's fishing with his dog on the bank of a lake, you know, minding his own business, not talking to anybody, not doing anything. 50%, and the other 50% are going, yeah, that's what you get for fishing. That's what you get for not having your. How come I have to have my dog in a leash and you don't? You don't, you know, that other 50% of people, those assholes, those people. Yeah.
The Zimmerman crowd.
What's that?
The Zimmerman crowd.
Yes. Fucking A. So I get in the car, and when I get back on 22nd, I'm headed back towards me. It's 4:40 in the afternoon. It's just a ton of commuter traffic. I'm not going anywhere. And I'm like sitting there. My hands are at the tens and twos. And now I'm having the conversation with the cop I really wanted to have. And you, who hasn't done that? You get pulled over. You get a ticket.
Right,
you're like,
right.
Yes, officer. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yes. Okay. Yeah. You know, blah, blah. I'll sign this. I don't sign this. And then as soon as that cop pulls away, you're like, I'll tell you something. You just start talking to nobody.
Right.
GT's like sitting in the seat next to me. She's looking at me like, who are you talking to? And I'm just like, well, I'm just fucking fishing. I'm not doing anything. You know, I'm like, I guarantee you meth sales went up while you three guys were, you know, I'm just, you know, doing that kind of thing that you want to say to a cop.
Oh, yeah. You're making everybody so safe.
I know. Oh, my God. The fear factor just went way down in St. Pete because I put my fishing pole away. You know, that kind of stuff. So I had to share that with you, Dave, because I know now if Dave, do you fish?
I don't.
You don't? Ferris, you don't fish, do you?
Not in years.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically none. But if Dave was like sitting there hanging out with me, Dave would go, excuse me, officer, I think the Fourth Amendment. He would just like, you know, he'd know exactly what to say and when to say it and say, you know, is my fishing pole being detained? Are you detained? Yeah. Are you detaining? Will my tackle box be in lockup? You know,
this is streaming live right now on the internet.
Yeah. Can I pick that up?
Right.
You know,
if I saw three cops coming, that's the first thing I do is I'd pull the phone out and get the video going. We're like, you know, but here's the thing is all they have to do is point to the sign and it's, you'd hear that fucking Price is Right sound. Wah, wah, wah.
And you know what? They're right.
Right.
Well,
they're right.
Yeah, but the sign is wrong and right because you can legally fish there 4 months out of the year. Okay.
Yeah. So you could get arrested for not having a calendar, basically.
Yes. Yeah. I'm not allowed to fish there after Labor Day. Once Labor Day comes and goes, you have to wait all the way back around through spring and the beginning part of summer to Memorial Day, and then I can go fishing again in the same spot.
Pricks.
Seriously, why do you need to learn astronomy to fish? Oh, I can tell it's June by where Cassiopeia is in the sky. Let's go fishing at Crest Lake.
You know what? I actually have that Google Sky. You ever use that? You guys use that app?
Sure.
It's a cool app. I mean, it's a very cool app. You know. okay. So, are you guys on Twitter? By the way, let's make sure everybody's up and running. Are you guys tweeting or doing anything?
No.
Yes,
I am on Twitter.
I'm responding to people that saying that we're overmodulated. Or it's going out overmodulated.
It's going out overmodulated? Okay. Let me back down. Hang on a second. I'm going to back down on the output just a tad there. You know what it is? It's my mixer isn't sending it there, but I'm going to back down on the butt software. I'm going to bring it down about to there. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And it's still peaking pretty hot. Let me back it down. All right. I'm going to back my mic down a little bit. Everybody back down just a notch. Okay, and we're good. It looks like it's okay now. Doesn't sound overmodulated now. Dave, exactly. Just give me a 1, 2, 3.
1, 2, 3, 4.
And Ben.
I am down just about as low as I can go.
There you go. Doesn't sound distorted to me in my headphones, but then again, I'm half deaf anyway.
Well, you know? We're doing a show for ourselves anyway. What's the difference?
Ferris, I got to ask you, we'll hit a ton of topics tonight, and I do want to play a little bit of this audio from... hang on a second. Let's make sure this computer is working. I've had an interesting week here in the home studio. Here we go. He's watching it. He's watching the kick. He's watching the kick. Standing in the middle of his living room.
No!
See, those are Seahawks fans. So when you hear excited people, that's the Seahawks fan reaction. And they're, you know, I...
You know, I can't help but just be a total asshat here and say that could just as well be the audio from one of the recent mass shootings around the country.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
I mean, and I only say that just to piss everybody off that thinks that the media is doing a good job of covering any of them or touching on any part of important pieces of information that
have not
anything to do with any of them.
They're not. You know, we'll segue to that in a second. Right now there's a guy in the middle of the snow in Minnesota. He's walking down the street. He was listening on his Walkman. He drops everything he has in his hands. It's a homeless guy. And then he walks up to a bus sign. Listen. Listen. He's literally punching a giant, like, metal sign. That guy just broke his cane. This guy's on a cane. He's leaning on a cane, and he breaks his cane.
You gotta be fucking kidding me!
He's in his pajamas, leaning on a.
He fucking missed it.
Then he reaches down, and he picks up the piece of the broken cane and slams it down.
No! What the fuck?
That's a Seahawk fan. And he's face painted.
He missed it! He fucking missed it!
That's an entire Seahawks bar going crazy. And that guy's he's actually got some good face paint. I'll give him some credit. Seahawks football. They're all celebrating and high-fiving. Sorry, Tucker. Tucker's the one Viking fan in the room. Listen, listen. She's sitting in the kitchen, and she's trying not to cry. I can't fucking stand it. She just hit her own kitchen cabinet and almost broke it. She's singing to her television. She's a Seahawk fan. There's more Seahawk fans. And see, they're like pissed. They're like, oh, we're going to lose. Now watch. And they literally, there's two men. It looks like a really bad beer commercial. They are literally jumping up and down, hugging each other.
You know what, though? As if Seahawks fans haven't been smug enough for the last fucking 5 years.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Seriously.
Like, they got more. Here is the radio call. I believe this is the Seahawks call. Check this out.
Try to give the Vikings
snap good,
the lead.
Spot down. Walsh's kick is up.
The kick is up.
Are you kidding me? The season can't end like that.
No, that's
missed it left.
That's the Vikings announcer.
And the Seattle Seahawks are off to Charlotte. Blair Walsh missed a 27-yard field goal, and the Minnesota Vikings are going to lose 10-9.
Yep. That's the play-by-play guy for the Vikes. He's handled it. I mean, he's got excitement in his voice. It's hard to tell the difference between the guy that you're hearing and the guy you're going to hear in a second. But
sometimes you just rather be lucky than good.
Oops. Should have said just oops. Now, this last one, before we go back to the serious subject, that it's a good segue, by the way, Ferris. I want to get to that. Except my computer. See, I knew it. I've got a lot going on, and now I'm getting the blue circle. Here we go. Come on, blue circle, stop. It's making
try to give the Vikings the lead.
Okay. This is the Seahawks.
The snap, the kick is up.
Missed
it's
it.
No good. Are you kidding me? It's no good. Oh, baby, it's Christmas in Minnesota, and the Seahawks have dodged a bullet. From 26 yards out, Matt Blair misses. Blair Walsh, I beg your
Matt
pardon.
Blair, I don't know who
misses
that is.
The field goal attempt. And Seattle now with 22 seconds left. And the Vikings have no timeouts left. One kneel down, and the Seahawks will move on to Carolina.
The reason I bring this up, I'm a football fan, and I have my reasons for having my distractions. God bless them. You know, I really need them. I think we all do. But the thing about this, the amount of attention, Dave, Ferris, that this kind of stuff gets,
yes,
compared to something where people should be screaming like you're talking about, I don't know, Ferris, what is desensitizing us to giving a shit? Not people like, not the three of us. We're still emotionally invested in this thing, and we're kind of looking at, you know, oh God, another police shooting. But it seems like there's one every day, and that's not an exaggeration. So why isn't it an issue in our country? Why isn't it? Is it because the media, like you said, is completely ignoring it and not applying pressure?
I would say that the media doesn't only ignore it, but it encourages that kind of behavior, because if it bleeds, it leads. I mean, everybody knows that's the news quote. I mean, anybody that's been involved in media or news.
Sure.
And I think it's – this is where I want to really be specific about how I say this, because you could say, gun violence is a mental health issue, blah, blah, blah. You could say that, and that's
– Well, we don't have to motorboat through this. We can hit it one at a time, but keep going, yeah.
Right, there's pieces of that, but I think it's a social disease that this country suffers from. I don't think it's mental health alone, and honestly, I don't think, obviously, gun laws, I don't agree with infringing on the Second Amendment. I just don't, okay? I don't think that the numbers even correlate that to be the case, even though it's twisted to say that sometimes. Look at police and look at regular people. You probably have a higher percentage of gun violence of police on citizen than you do of citizen on citizen, if you look at the numbers.
Yeah. Well, if you take, in other words, if you were to take this, the amount of cops in the world and their victims, and then you went with the same amount of citizens. Because if it's just citizens, man, you're going to have many more guns, many more instances. Those numbers won't be. But if you were to take the same segment, you know, 30,000 people or something, and then, like you said, private sector versus the police sector, I have to agree, Dave. I do. I have to agree that I think you'd probably see, you know, pardon the pun, cops are outgunning us.
Well, here's the thing is I think cops' trained reaction is to shoot first and shoot a lot and then figure out what's going on, right? Whereas citizens, like just within the last 24 hours in the Tampa Bay area, I read two articles where one person shot a intruder in his backyard, the guy lived, and a store worker in East Tampa shot somebody who was robbing him with a knife, and the guy lived. But if they were approached by cops, most likely they'd be dead, you know?
Right, and I think that it all comes down – it's not just accountability, though. You know, politicians use the word accountability. Accountability is garbage. That's a media buzzword. It's consequence. And I think that people don't understand the full consequence of their actions. And I think that when they're training cops – look, police officers do have an incredible dangerous job at certain points. There's definitely times when they are in harm's way and they need to protect themselves. So I want to say that, you know, not all cops are criminals or murderers.
Well,
I mean,
every traffic stop
them,
at night where you can't see what's going on, you know, they stand behind your front door on your car. They lean back. Their hands always on their piece. I mean, these guys are, I got a kind of feel for that cop who, you know,
is
by himself. You never know. Could be some, you know, he accidentally pulls over a guy who weaves. Next thing you know, the guy's got a gun. The guy's wanted by the law. And the moment he steps up to that car, he's a dead man. So you have to take precautions. Right. But adrenaline.
It's familiarity.
Okay, go,
and it's
go
fear.
For it.
So, you know, a lot of people, another discussion point is everyone tries to say guns are either all bad or all good. Or everybody should have them or nobody should have them, right? Which is, they're all false equivalencies. They're all ridiculous arguments.
They never say no one should have them. They said they mean no one but the cops should have them.
Yeah, which is scary. So
those gun control idiots aren't for universal gun control. They're just for gun control for the populace.
Right.
All right, here's a question. So, just for a second, picture this. For some reason, there are no more guns in our country except the cops have them. That's it. How many more police shootings would we see? Would we see a decline? I mean, obviously, we'd expect a decline if we're not brandishing a piece or we're not, you know, reaching out.
No, because girls would still have them.
Oh, no. Aside from that, all you got to do is pull out your fucking cell phone and you get shot because they think it's a gun.
Okay, that's my point. So you could go to the complete, you know, Pollyanna world of no guns. You know, in other words, no one has guns except the cops. Would we see a decline in police shootings or half these guys, you know, beat the shit out of people or choke them to death or tase them to death or, you know, I just see an aggressive police force. If you're not holding a gun, cops are aggressive to you.
Well, antagonistic for sure.
Unless you're in Oregon and you're taking over government lands, then they shake hand and post for pictures.
I don't want to paint. I'm not looking to paint cops as bad or good. I mean, my issue is more with the gun control and some of these ridiculous arguments.
Well, you were mentioning
one of them is, I don't know if gun violence goes up or down depending on which segments of statistics you move. But I do know that as the fear index rises, people buy more guns.
Yes.
So I don't know I'm not saying if that's good or that's bad. I'm just saying that there is a correlation between that. So it behooves media or people who are being funded by gun lobbies or the NRA to spread fear because as people are more scared, they will buy more firearms.
Why does the right seem so adamant about protecting cop behavior, even when it's an open and shut case? We're going to get to some audio here in a second from an ex prosecutor. I'm not sure if you guys saw that post, but she talks about what goes on behind the doors of grand juries. Because when we get to it, Dave, you know, you get there and you say, okay, you know, a cop shot someone, that person's dead. Well, at least it's going to a grand jury. So we're going to get to that. But is there a consequence? That's the word you use better than accountability. You're right. You're right. Is there consequence? I mean, how often do cops
get charged
with a crime, never mind get convicted? I mean, very rarely do they even become charged with the abuse of police power. Never mind, you know, some cop that actually goes to jail. I mean,
and that's like Haley's Comet. You got to remember this, that when you go to a grand jury, the grand jury is only there to see if it's probable cause. It's not there in trial. But the last cop thing that, what was it, a month or so ago where the cop didn't get charged, and it's the prosecutor, they like presented evidence. It was almost like a trial. And that's when the grand jury said, no, we're not going to let this go into a jury.
Right. It's either indicted or you're not, it's dismissed.
Right. It's just enough evidence to go forward. That's it. And they pretty much was a trial without a jury for the most part, without evidence. You know, it's one sided.
Well, yeah, it's really and like batting practice, though, really, because they do that if they're not sure if they have enough to convict you. So they kind of send you to a little pretrial.
Right. But if it's a batting practice with, you know, the top pitcher in the baseball league, then it's lopsided. It's not fair.
Agreed.
And I want to address something you said. You were mentioning about accountability. And I am a firm believer that if you remove qualified immunity, things would straighten out overnight. Because
what qualified immunity is, Dave, but some of our people listening, three of them,
I'm assuming that's a phrase that applies to police officers.
Right.
Well, basically, qualified immunity means that because you're working, you're doing a job that somebody's telling you to do, you're exempt from any kind of liability. So, you know, they could shoot somebody, and because they're a cop, they don't get sued personally. What happens is that the department will sue, and then the municipality will pay the fine or the tort or the claim. Whereas I'd rather be able to sue the cop, you know, because once a cop pulls his gun and he thinks to himself, well, I can be a dick to this person or not, but if this guy, you know, like if a cop comes up to me and starts wising off to me and I got on video and I start, you know, mentioning things, there's a good chance he's going to back down because he knows that I am not the low-hanging fruit. You know, I resist. I push back and I will take your ass to court. I'll take a month off and I'll do this because I got the time.
So, Dave, Ayn Rand would say that all the good cops won't want to be cops anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Well, hold on a second. Are there good cops? No. And my whole.
I'm just being a dick. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but
so I love you,
but
dude.
Thanks,
man.
We're you know, we're kind of beating up a little bit on cops here. And,
no, we're not.
Know,
no, we're not. No, we're not beating up on them.
Well,
no, we're not. No,
everyone
whoa.
Knows I don't. Everyone.
Okay. Listen, I had three cops all wearing bulletproof vests. Okay, yeah, that's another thing. This isn't Barney Fife. This isn't the 60s where some guy's only got a nightstick. He does have a gun, but there's no – these guys are all dressed in tactical gear. They look like SWAT used to look like. They are an imposing force from the moment they come near you. They're not trying to de-escalate anything. They basically say, here's my wall. I dare you to come near it. And, you know, it makes me wonder about two things. Is it just because the fear factor, as Ferris calls it, is so high that cops feel they have to dress that way? Is it, you know, and a combination, is it about the people that sell all that gear and the money behind the police forces? Or are a lot of these cops ex-Army people? And
so,
you know, and they come
above,
in where
though.
They could kick in a door and there was no accountability because they were in war zones.
Right.
And a lot of these people are becoming cops. Is it in the training? Basically, that's what I'm getting to.
Well,
do you think
we have to give this? We have to give the unused military gear to someone other than ISIS at some point.
Yeah, we sell it to I'm sure we sell it to ISIS for a profit too. Some I. Hell, we're cashing their oil checks.
Yeah, we only have so many 1987 Toyota pickups.
Oh, you know,
they're not 80s. They're
no,
90s.
Those are nice.
They're 2000s.
Oh, and they all had the same sand colored paint job, so they could blend in. Do you ever notice that too? They're not driving like a black truck or a white truck. They're driving literally a tan looking truck that from the air you couldn't see if you unless you were looking for it. So, and that's a great side. But I think this comes down to training. You know, I'll say what I said about those guys tonight. Okay. Yeah. You know, it turns out I shouldn't legally have been fishing there after September. I didn't know that. They weren't really being dicks about it. They just wanted me to stop and leave. They didn't even ask me to leave. They just said, stop fishing and put your dog on a leash. They didn't say you have to leave. They didn't say anything brutal to me. Okay. But I'm a guy with a fishing pole. I'm not some guy in the dark alley who I don't know who you are. You step out, you know, then the adrenaline kicks. And like you said, Dave, that cop is going to say, you know what? Right now, I'm going to shoot before any doubt. I'm going to shoot and I'll deal with it afterwards because, like you said, Dave, and Ferris said, there's no consequence. So it's like lead with the gun and then worry about it later. And that's what one of you guys said that. I'm not sure which. But I think that's really the mentality now. I think that's what they're told. I think that's what they tell each other. And I think certainly, and this is why I want to play some of this audio, because this woman used to be a district attorney. And, you know, Dave, don't worry. She drops plenty of F-bombs, so you'll feel right at home. And check out some of the stuff she says. You know, it was a learning process for me. I always heard grand jury. Before I play some of this, either one of you guys knew what happens behind those doors? Have you ever read about it or studied it?
For a grand jury?
Yeah. What? In other words, what literally happens? I hear the word grand jury, but I don't know what happens, you know? Oh, it's, yeah. It's you know, so did you know the process at all?
Well, my father was on a grand jury in New York, so he told me the whole process.
Okay.
And it's actually, the interesting part is that if you're part of a grand jury, you can cross-examine witnesses and people on all sides of it.
Yes, you're supposed to be able to ask questions. I knew that.
Yep.
That I knew. Okay, listen to her for a second here.
Share this with you. Y'all know I'm a lawyer, I'm a former prosecutor, and I'm currently a defense attorney. I was a prosecutor in Manhattan, New York City. So let me explain to you, because we are getting a lot of feedback about these grand juries that are not indicting these police officers, and you need to understand something. The first thing you need to understand is that a grand jury presentation is an ex parte proceeding. What does that mean, Ike? Don't talk that lawyer shit. Okay, ex parte means one-sided. That means that there's only one side being presented in the grand jury. There is nothing to controvert or contradict what the prosecutor is putting in a grand jury.
Okay, so basically all you have here, you don't have a defense attorney for a dead guy who got shot.
Well, that's
shot
what
in
I said.
Street. Yes.
That's exactly what I said.
So you knew some of this. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I didn't. I know it's one-sided. I know it's designed to just to see if you have enough evidence to move on to. Actually, the definition says a juror normally of 23 jurors selected to examine the validity of an accusation before trial. So basically, they're not even, you know, it's not even, you know, 100%, you know, like all jurors have to agree. It's not even that. They just figure out, yeah, there's enough stuff here for it to move forward and let a jury decide.
Yeah, but again, this is what she's saying is when you say enough stuff, that's, quote, evidence. We'll use that phrase around it. Enough evidence to move forward. Moving forward means to bring charges against a police officer because whether it was an act or stepping outside the boundaries of the law or whatever the reason is. And listen to what she says about the actual what goes on in that room.
Unless a defendant chooses to exercise his right to testify in the grand jury. And even then, the defendant is allowed to come in with counsel, but you as an attorney, me as an attorney, when I escort clients into the grand jury, I am not even allowed to fucking speak.
Okay, think of that. You're allowed to attend.
Wow.
Okay? But the lawyer.
Right, no representation.
Exactly.
Basically.
The lawyer that represents you has nothing. They're not allowed to say anything. See, I'm learning the process here. You know, when I first watched this, hang on just a couple more seconds here.
Do you hear me? I'm not allowed to say shit. If I want to confer with my client because he might not be sure how to answer a question, we got to step outside and come back in. The grand jury, the entire presentation is controlled, is orchestrated by the prosecutor. The evidence that goes in, the witnesses that go in, how the evidence is presented, the spin. Prosecutors control the grand jury. There's no judicial oversight. Now, that's not till after you got an indictment. There's no judicial oversight about how the case is going to be presented, what witnesses are going to be presented, what charges are going to be presented. All of that is at the exclusive discretion of the prosecutor.
Okay, and this is, again, remember, this woman, Ferris, used to do what she's talking about. She was a DA.
There's another piece to this, too, though. If a cop is the defendant, the prosecutor, the DA's office, still, even if the grand jury wants to indict, the prosecutor can still decide whether they, A, want to even bring any charges, and then if they're forced to bring some charges, they still get to pick and choose which ones they do actually charge them with.
Well, think about this.
Which said, most of the time is not following procedure or something stupid. Well, like a code.
She says, I can go in with my client. Well, what if your client's dead? What if the actual person that the whole thing is someone who was shot by a cop, and you're supposed to have someone defending you, and you should be by a trial or jury of your peers. You should be obviously have it done in a quick enough time. You should not be held. The Constitution comes into play for you. But it sounds like in the grand jury system, which I knew nothing about, and I'm just listening to one video, that this is why 1 out of 20 cops that kill someone ever even goes to trial, never mind gets convicted.
Well,
the system is built to make sure that the entire process is controlled from the beginning to its relative most of the time when it's like Dave said, when most of this shit, they go, oh, no grand jury, no grand jury, no grand jury.
It's worse than that, Scott. All right. So let's say it does move to a grand jury and you are in a trial jury now, right? Everything in there is controlled by the state. Right. Suppose. All right. So we know that the judge is paid by the state. We know the prosecuting attorney or the DA is paid by the state. We know that the cops are paid by the state. Right. And the jurors are picked by the state. Right. And you think, all right, well, my attorney gets to voir dire the jurors, but my attorney can only be in that represent me in that courtroom if he has passed the bar, which is a state run thing. Here in Florida, you can't. We had this a couple of years ago when Judge Mushmouth over in Orlando, he made it a constitutional free zone. You couldn't inform jurors about their right for jury nullification. You can't mention jury nullification in the state of Florida. Otherwise, they'll censure you or they might even throw you in jail for contempt of court. So the whole system is rigged against you. And here's a stunning fact, right? Most, I think it's upwards of 97 people that actually go to a jury trial are convicted, right? And
that's
you know,
why so many people plead out. Yeah, you're right.
Right. Could you imagine? All right, we could either give you 20 years if you go to trial, or we'll give you 5 years probation if you plead now. Now, you say to yourself, "Shit, I'm 40 years old. I don't want to get out at. I don't want to risk getting out at 60.
No, you take 5 and you get off 3 with good behavior.
Right. So that you do the numbers. And here's what happens is that now the other side of the coin and also 97% of the trials or the convictions come from plea bargains. Right. Who benefits from a plea bargain?
DA. Lawyers.
The criminal.
Both sides.
And the DA. Yeah. The guilty and the lawyers.
Right.
And the
courts. The innocent people get
screwed.
The
innocent do not. Right. Exactly. The whole system is stacked against you.
Agreed. And here's the thing, though. I think it's even – there's even more little plugins, little Easter eggs of hope that – and when I say hope, I say it very sarcastically. There's also stuff like vaccine court or stuff like mandatory arbitration.
Yeah, but vaccine courts
– sidestep.
Yeah, exactly. Anything that's outside the actual law. The regular legal system.
Anything the little guy or the innocent guy usually actually uses to his advantage is pretty much taken off the table.
Right. And if you follow the trial of Ross Ulbricht, which is the guy who ran the original Silk Road, you see how the judge and the whole team hamstrung him, and he couldn't bring this up in court. He couldn't bring that up in court. The two FBI agents that actually were in charge of getting him in trouble have been convicted and gone to jail for embezzlement, right? And they can't get a new trial because they're like, no, you can't. No, we're not doing this. And it's so messed up. Again, you look it up. There's a movie about it. I can't remember the name of the movie. I saw it the day after he was convicted. everything is against you. Here in, let's just say here in town, you want to, you get a red light ticket, you got to go, you go show up. If you, and I've done this already, if you contest the ticket, right, it's a $158 ticket, but if you contest it, it can go up to as much as $500 and $40 in court costs. So you're looking now at $540 over $158, right? And if you say, well, that's not me in the car, they say to you, and they tell you, you have to prove who was in the car. I was like, wait a minute. The burden of proof is on the state.
That's right. Well, at least it's supposed to be. You're right. Of course, it's always supposed to be that.
Right.
And you shouldn't have to incriminate yourself. You can plead the fifth.
Exactly.
You shouldn't incriminate yourself. You shouldn't have to prove anything.
That's why I got out of the ticket, because
I got caught with a fishing pole.
I went all the way to the court, and they dismissed it before I even showed up.
Yeah, they're like, Cunningham.
The cop did not want to deal with it.
They're like, here comes Cunningham.
They did not want to deal with it. And that was in the city of Gulfport down there in southern Pinellas County, and they just actually terminated their red light camera system because somebody brought it to court and said it was unconstitutional. Yay!
Yeah, most of Pinellas County got rid of them a while ago. I want to bring this topic full circle here. From everything I'm learning, from everything you guys are talking about, I think we're going to see there will be no decline in police abuse or violence. In fact, it's going to ratchet up. Now, when people talk about a police state, they want to go all 1984 completely, where you're locked in your house, and you know, people think of 100% of something when they say it, not the incremental steps that it takes to eventually get to where it's out of control. I talk about police brutality with average people that I'm friends with, and most of them side with the cop. Oh, you know, what's the classic thing they say? Well, if you don't want to get shot, don't break the law. You know, if you don't want a cop hassling you, don't break the law. You know, all you got to do is follow the law and you won't have to worry about it. Well, what we're talking about here is cops that are overstepped their boundaries. You know, you're supposed to be innocent until you are proven guilty of something. When you are arrested for something, I don't care what it is. Maybe you're fishing and your dog's running around like a maniac. Well, if they got video of me fishing and my dog running around and they have actual proof and then they're going to prove my guilt, yeah, that's, you know, obviously I'm not going to go through that process because I realized that was wrong according to the law. But, you know, when you get pulled over, or it doesn't matter, maybe you're protesting and the next thing you know, you got three cops kicking you in the kidneys. There needs to be somewhere in between where the moment starts and that moment ends, someone has to say, wait a minute, this man is supposed to be protected by you. Arrested, sure, you know, show them that they're breaking the law, arrest them, take them, book them, put them into the process, because the Constitution is supposed to still be there to protect you. The Fourth Amendment, even the Fifth, you know, don't answer any of their questions. All of those things seem to get basically they get fucking pushed out of the way because someone reaches for a gun real quick, or their nightstick, or their taser, because they don't know the whole process of, hi there, I'm Officer So-and-so, you're breaking the law, you have the right to remain silent, la, 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 you know, and don't escalate the process. If you need to be this cop and you need to, you know, arrest people, I'm not saying I agree with everything that's going on, but what I'm saying is it seems to have gone from Barney Fife to fucking Sylvester Stallone, and
right,
you know, and I'm, you know, Judge Dredd, you know, like I'm your judge and jury here, standing in front of you now, and I have a gun,
and
RoboCop or whatever, where it gets to that. It doesn't seem, when you talk to the average person, they don't see that. They just see themselves going through their life and, oh, yeah, I didn't have my sticker. I got pulled over, blah, blah, blah. I paid my $85 fine. Okay, I get that. But most people don't break the law. Most people think that cops are doing good jobs, great jobs. Most people I talk to think, yeah, the cops do a great job. It's a tough job. It's hard to do. You know, every once in a while. So the majority of Americans do not see the police state fairs. They don't see it. They don't see it now.
Well, it's different. I think you have to look. First of all, I think that the tone is set by the leader of whatever group you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it depends on the sheriff. or it depends on the police commissioner. I mean, right now, look in New York City. You have Bratton out there. The guy is a fascist. He wants to rule. He wants to rule with an iron fist, and he wants. He's not there to uphold the law or protect and serve. He is there to maintain order and basically be your overlord while you're in the city. That's what he wants. He wants a police state there. Grady Judd is kind of a little bit like that. Joe Arpaio is like that. But you know what? Pinellas County, Bob Gualtieri is not like that at all. You know, there's other sheriffs out there regionally here that are not these fascist overreaching tyrants. They're more leaders.
You know, you brought that up, and that's a great point. And Dave, I was going to ask you that as well. I'll let you finish first. A lot of the people on the right that I talk about, you know what? Cops are just doing what they're told to do. If you want to change what's happening in the world, go to the governors, go to the people that are kind of tightening the vice of the police state. You know, those are the people that are actually, you know, it does trickle from the top to the bottom. It's not a bunch of cops that are thinking, this is the world I'm going to live in and I'm going to shape it. Most of the cops, Dave or Ferris, I'll go to you first so you can finish.
Right.
But most of these guys technically are just doing what their superiors tell them to do. So if we're going to de-escalate the police, this you know, ever-increasing police presence in our life, we're not going to be able to do it with the cops. We're not going to be able to do it with an individual cop who shoots someone. It has to go to the lawmakers. And
it does.
And
that's why
you mentioned those guys here in Pinellas County, because some differ from others.
Absolutely, they do. It really depends. I mean, it's a world of difference, you know, just a couple counties over. But respect for the population, respect for the citizens in your community is important. And a lot of the shootings, a lot of the violence, a lot of the escalations happen because you have people who are not policing where they're from. And not only are they not living there, they refuse to intermingle or become part of that society. And I think that a cop...
Yeah, people used to know the cops in their streets. They used to know them by name. Yep.
Right. They have to be part of the community. And it's when they see you as an outsider and then you come in and you're not only are you an outsider and you refuse to mingle or cohabitate with some of these people that may have a different culture or background than you, but you come in like you're a freaking overlord. And that's the problem. You saw it on TV. You saw what happened. OK, I'm not saying that people weren't breaking the law and weren't being criminals in certain areas as well. But when you see these police officers coming into areas where they automatically assume there's going to be trouble and it's going to be dangerous, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, well, exactly. Ferguson, I think it was CNN or somebody did the breakdown. I think it was actually maybe even John Oliver did the breakdown of how many Hispanic cops there were on their force, how many black cops there were on their force. And it was a fraction. And, of course, Ferguson was a highly ethnic and African-American community, 80-90%, something like that. And the cops were the exact opposite, where they're 80-90% white. And, again, like you said, not even from that area. You know, would you shoot someone on a street where they knew you as Officer Joe? You know, or would you – you know, I think, Dave, I want you to finish up on this. We'll play a tune or two. But I don't see – what I see happening is the militarization is through the roof. I mean, you can just look at the way these guys are dressed. These aren't SWAT teams showing up in special vans. This is your everyday police officer now that is literally wearing body armor. That is wearing. I'm not surprised they don't have hand grenades. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to exaggerate. But if you look at the way a cop presents itself or himself or herself, it is completely a show of force. And it wasn't that. You know, no one wants to see the blue and red light in the rearview mirror. But I remember, you know, cops were halfway decent. Now, Dave, are they afraid? Has the fear factor also affected the cop? Because, you know, I mean, we're now realizing that there's much more violence coming from the police force. Are they becoming more violent because they fear us? Or is simply, you know, what is making that cop go to that gun so quickly? What do you think?
I think it's because, well, we've been in this war for, what, 14 years, and a lot of cops come back from the military and they get jobs and they're very aggressive. And we all know that, you know, what is it, 20-some-odd veterans are offing themselves a day.
Yeah, it's
so they
more
come
than
back.
That. Yeah.
Right. Most people that come back from war, especially this war of aggression over in the Middle East, they come back probably a little bit screwed up and they have this aggressive attitude, let's just say. And also the cop has changed over the last, let's just say, 70 years. Because you mentioned Barney Fife back a while ago. And Barney Fife and that whole thing, they were peace officers, right? They didn't really bust your chops if you weren't doing anything that didn't cause property damage or personal damage, right? Except for Otis. He would be drunk all the time. But, you know, they kind of just came there and kept the peace, right? If you did something, you know, against property or person, then they got involved. Whereas, you know, today's thing, I mean, they would have never harassed you for fishing and having your dog off a leash, right? In 50 years from now, you can't walk with a limp, or, you know, because the laws are just going to get more and more, and there's just going to be less and less what you could do. I mean, when are people going to wake the fuck up? Is it do they have to institute prima nocta and you know, bang? I think I said that last week too, where they get first right to bang your wife. You know,
when your Netflix membership gets revoked, that's when they'll start counting.
Right. Could you imagine the cops
when they close down the football
house?
Stadiums, too? Yeah.
Well, could you imagine the cops coming to your house because you've shared your network, your Netflix password to somebody? That's what it's going to come to, you know, because they've outlawed for 70 years now a friggin' plant.
Hang on a second, my friends. For some reason, the stream is started over at a minute 8. Does that mean we dropped?
Yeah, I've noticed that you've been dropping out, and I think it's your internet connection that's a little flaky.
Yeah, it is awfully low. It is awfully low.
How many people are surfing?
Hang on a second. No, it's not Richard. It's not my roomie.
Are you streaming porn or something?
Yeah, how much porn are you watching right now?
You know, I've really cut down. I tell you what I'm going to do is, you know, I'd rather this drop out during a song. So here, mm-hmm. Oh man, if I reboot, that means I got to bring Mumble back up and everything, right?
Yeah, but all you got to do is just log back into Mumble. It's not like you got to do anything special. Just double click on
okay,
it.
I'll tell you what, why don't I do that? Because I'm looking, you know, unfortunately, Out on the Ledge Studios uses Wi-Fi. I don't have a wire connection. You remember my DSL nightmare. And I am looking at a real low signal here. So I'll tell you what. Here's what we'll do. I'm actually going to play two songs. You guys are not going to hear me because I am going to reboot. Okay? And I am going to I'm going to reboot my server, too.
All right. Me and Ferris will just talk to each other and we'll say bad shit about you.
Okay. I can deal with that. All right.
Whoa, man. You're getting crazy now.
Scott Ledger.
That wordsmith who will whisper all the wonders of the world.
Are you the little guy making all that big noise?
I'll tell you the truth. I don't really feature listening to a replay of last night. You know, it's kind of depressing. Three.
nighttime out on the ledge.
Sure, let's have a little bit of this. I get the big Bob Marley joint. Look at this. Here, try this.
Ledger.
That's what you are. You are the motherfucking Antichrist.
DC, Dangerous Conversation.
I tried every fucking thing I could fucking think of to mold him into a proper kind of DJ.
Ledgy Poo.
Something greater than ourselves.
It's supposed to be a dangerous conversation.
Well, this just came from the FCC. Did you say testicles on the air?
Oh, no more Yankee, my winky.
You know, most of these people are Satan-worshipping junkies.
What are you, religious or something?
Here's Ledge.
Here I am running my board again.
All right, you guys back?
Yep.
Yes. Using Wi-Fi, I have this little Wi-Fi antenna that you plug in. It's a little USB thing. And it turns out that when I put an aluminum beer can near it, the signal drops. So I've actually...
Yeah, you're still dropping out.
I know. I sat there. I had four bars. I rebooted. And now I'm back down to two bars again. I swear to God, during those songs, everything was fine. And then right now I'm sitting here waiting. All right, boys, hang on a second. I'm going to unplug the antenna and plug it back in. Be right back. Talk to monks. Actually, you guys carry the show. Do something. Be funny.
We can't.
Ready?
Because you're,
go.
You're the one. If you disconnect.
It doesn't matter. You won't.
Now somebody's got speakers on, too, because I can hear myself.
I don't know
the
if we're speaking
you
through your
on?
Butt.
I do not get this. I went in the other room. I unplugged the router, you know, and I plugged it back in.
Is your phone close by, or a cordless phone, or a microwave? Well, I know there's no microwave close
by. My phone's right there.
You might want to shut that off.
Okay, hang on. Let me do that.
They play on the same similar frequencies, okay. Either. So yeah. 2.4 or 5 gigahertz.
I don't get it. I was sitting at four bars. The stream is still connected. It's been connected for 8 minutes now. So basically when it shut off and it came back on. Jordan Page there. Do you guys hear me okay, or am I still cutting out?
You're still cutting out. If you look at the mumble thing and you know how it's got the red lips,
yep.
You'll see it go turn gray when you're.
No, it's been red. I see all three of us registered on Dave's Mumble server, and it's been red. I'm just wondering if it's the actual internet connection I have.
Yeah, maybe it's on our side.
Hang on a second. Let me plug and unplug. You guys are going to drop. I'll be back.
Got to get it right, man.
Tech talk on Dangerous Conversation.
Server connection failed. The remote host closed the connection.
Son of a bitch.
Connected.
Now I'm sitting at four bars right now. It's still connecting. You guys hear me okay?
Yeah, but you're still.
Now I've got a killer signal. Now it sounds great.
All right, let me ask you this. Yeah. I hate to do this on air, but go to Mumble.
I'm on Mumble. I'm talking.
Go to configure settings.
Okay, got it.
And then audio input. Does the transmission say continuous or voice activity?
Audio input. Where's audio input? It says continuous.
Left. All right, good.
Yeah.
Okay. We could almost construe it as, you know.
Well, the stream is reconnected. Let me hang on a second. Let me goose this a little bit so you guys might hear me better. Are you hearing me okay?
Yeah, maybe it's I don't know. Because Sean says you sound fine.
Well, the bugs, you know, the funny thing is about the new softwares. Wait a minute. There's no plural in software, right? Software is plural. It's like deer.
And beer. Yeah.
Yes.
Deer and beer and software. Software can mean more than one. I played Jordan Page's thing there. You know, I've interviewed a lot of those people, guys, and I know Ferris has, and we've all been part of what I think is, and this is the question I want to get to. It's a little egotistical sometimes to think that, even though there's millions of people out there doing their own thing, they have their YouTube pages, they have their podcasts, they're a part of everything from, you know, cop block to, you know, thinking of any person out there challenging a system and doing it on via video, via anything. In other words, the amount of people that are challenging something that's going on in the world is increasing. My question is it having any effect?
Yeah.
I mean, it does in my consciousness. I know more. And people know more if they listen to a show and they go, oh, I heard the school interview and now I know more about grand juries or something. I get that part.
But I, you know, it would be nice to see somewhere a nice dip in their progress, because it just seems they're a fucking steamroller, and everybody else, even though it's a million ants or 10 million ants, I wish I did. You know, I ask myself every day, you know, is progress being made? Because, you know, you go to certain websites, they now have millions of viewers or clicks or whatever, which means more people are engaged in what's going on, Dave. You first.
Yeah.
But how much change is really taking place? I mean, the NDAA is still there. The Patriot Act is still there. Nothing's going away.
Right. And what I meant by being changed is that now you have this in Arizona trying to make it illegal for you to videotape police. Meanwhile, it's already gone to the Supreme Court. And the Glick decision says that they could do that. And, you know, you got these people trying to make laws despite the fact that they're unconstitutional, you know?
Well, it's probably because they're trying to get elected and they want the police force endorsement, you know, that union. They want to endorse that governor or anything else. But Ferris, what do you think? I think people are becoming more aware that they're being bullshitted. That I definitely can agree with. But the idea that somehow it's becoming something that's creating actual change. Give me an example. Okay. Cheer me up.
Going the way you hope. I think that we're becoming more polarized. I think that more people are getting involved, but there's more push and pull. And unfortunately, I feel like this. So at some point, no matter what you think or what your vision is for this country, at some point, everything comes down to you're still an American. You know that supposedly we have some form of freedom, you know, some kind of freedom, even if it's loose slavery, it's still some kind of freedom. I think there's a scary undertone of nationalism that is sweeping this country that is very similar to what happened in
Germany,
the mid-30s.
Yes.
An hour and 20 minutes we got in without saying Germany.
Well, but you know, I bring that up to people and they go, and I go, listen, it's not Mussolini. You're not going to see tanks rolling in your driveway yet. I usually say yet, because this type of fascism is done with banks and politicians and police forces. It's much more subtle. But I agree with you. I want to see enough people pissed off, and I see a lot more people engaged. But you know, I always ask. You know, I think for 2 years I've been doing this show. I always say, what will be the trigger event that becomes that critical mass that is an unstoppable movement in our country? And I with every single event that happens, I go, wow, that's pissing a lot of people off, or there's an awful lot. Everyone's just staying in their lanes and keeping their blinders on and saying, please don't fire me. I need my mortgage. And
But I don't think it's going to be an event. I think maybe not necessarily an event. I think that it's going to be sociological or artistic. It's going to be a book, or it's going to be a new band, or it's going to be an art festival or music festival.
That's a great point.
Like, it's going to be like the Woodstock of the millennials, you know, some kind of that type of event.
Will it be a new
it's
band or will it be an tragedy. Established band like U2 finally says, you know, we need to talk about the Federal Reserve or the World Bank? Because, you know, 20 years ago, that guy was going after them and asking them to put some forgiveness in their loans. He knew how the money system worked. But, you know, for the last 15 years, he hasn't said peep. So do you think it's going to be younger people? In other words, the newer bands, you know, the next 18 to 35 year old people are going to be carrying the change I'm talking about?
Maybe. I mean, I don't think talking about the Federal Reserve is going to do a damn thing. I don't think it's going to change much. I think that there are plenty of other facets to society and the global dynamic of existence right now that can be tweaked. And the Federal Reserve is going to be the last domino to fall, not the first.
It is the head of the snake earlier today, of course. The reason I kind of brought that up was in the puppet show that is our Congress. They apparently were going to vote on whether to create more transparency. And you think about how the trillions of dollars that they print off the books, there's no way they'd allow themselves to be audited.
Here's the deal, though. They already post minutes of the Federal Reserve meetings. They already are transparent. We already see – we have full access to everything that goes on in those discussions, but we're not going to ever see the balance sheet.
Yeah, we don't see the quantitative easing. They don't even call it that anymore. And haven't they stopped doing that altogether? In other words, they used to give reports on the, on the QE4, I think QE5. What was the last one? Five? I think it was five.
QE3.
No. There was more. There was more.
There was four or five.
Four or five.
QE,
which was basically printing money and putting it into computers as decimal points in ones and zeros. Basically,
that's why
keeping,
a quarter pound is
keeping
$7.
You know what quantitative easing is? It's keeping the Ponzi scheme afloat. That's what it does.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's an infusion of cash to raise. You know how they say a rising tide lifts all ships.
Mm-hmm. It's 0% interest for
except
5 years.
Except the ones that are anchored to the seafloor.
Right. That's except the ones with cement shoes.
Right. And see, here's the thing is we're kind of being narrow-minded by talking about the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve is just a branch of the global banking system. It just so happens to be one we're the one we live under it, and plus they kind of are the HNIC, right? But the real string pullers is the International Bank of Settlements in Switzerland, right? They meet four times a month, all the member nations. Now there's 60 member nations, right? You can go to Wikipedia, the Bank of International Settlements, scroll down, and you'll see that all these people that are at war with each other are all part of the whole banking system. And everybody makes money on both sides, you know? Let's say the Cold War. Everybody put arms or borrowed money from their central bank to buy arms.
Well, these guys play both sides because, A, they make money from both sides, and, B, whoever wins is their new business partners.
Right.
So that's what happened in Germany. I get that. But what I'm asking is, are enough people educated – paying attention enough about things because, frankly, you know, it's a neat clique to belong to when you can have a great conversation with anybody about anything that a dangerous conversation is about. Not all of it. But when I step back and look at what's happening, not just here, but outside our borders, you know, the TPP is going through just like every other. You know, no one's paying attention to it. It's not getting any press. Maybe one or two people mention it. And meanwhile, all it does is break down borders. And what it basically is going to make multinational corporations find them cheaper labor, get them around taxes, get them around tariffs, get them around all those things, and mainline the profits. So I wish I could say there's some progress being made. Now, there's progress being made in cannabis, obviously. Can either of you point to topics where you feel like there's been a little bit of progress in our country? At least a little.
No.
I honestly, it's worse. I mean, I always say this, and this is something that's really been just ticking me off, is that presidential elections right now, they already were, but now they're even more so just televised money laundering. Mm-hmm. Literally.
Absolutely.
We've got all these people with their super PACs with dark money coming all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Coming all over the place. And basically, you know, that's why we have 15 people on the Republican side. And oddly enough, I think there was 10 or 11 on the Democratic side at one point. People just didn't realize.
Right.
Because they cashed out quick because they didn't have enough money to launder.
So other than hemp and cannabis, I was thinking about this the other day. I was like, okay, there's got to be progress being made on at least a couple of fronts in our country. You know, maybe a few towns don't want the big giant tank or you know, armored vehicle. You know, there are tiny little battles being won, but when it comes to stopping the juggernaut that is, this is why I'm always saying it. I think we're going to splinter if there is some type of revolution in our country. You might see states like Texas try to do it, California, self-sustaining, one of the larger ones. They have almost their own mini economies going on where they could, you know, get away with it. But how bad does shit have to get before you have secession in this country, and what will it turn into? It's not like the Soviet Union where it kind of all collapsed in the late 80s, and next thing you know, you had all these satellites propping up, you know, Uzbekistan, Uzdikistan, and, you know, and all of that. I get that. But I don't see that happening in our country. I see a bunch of people afraid to lose more. You know, think about what happened in 2008. How many people went belly up in mortgages and savings accounts and you know, grandma's now working at a McDonald's, you know, trying to make ends meet. I just think we just keep taking the abuse. Thank you, sir. May I have another? Thank you, sir. May I have another? And I just think that's how it goes. And I wish, other than the cannabis front, which obviously makes a lot of sense for a lot of reasons, both medical and social, I see that. I see some progress. It's kind of neat. Now, that brings me to my question is, are the oligarchs giving us that? Did I ask you that last week, Dave? I think I did.
Maybe.
Do you think they're giving us the cannabis war? And we might see a reduction in the, quote, war on drugs. We're not going to, you know, turn into a country that absolutely goes, everything's legal. What's that European state that's did it for about 10 years? I always want to say Paraguay. It's not Paraguay.
Portugal.
Portugal. Portugal did it. And obviously the drug use went way down and people went into rehab and there was fewer abuses, fewer crimes, so on and so forth. I'm looking for progress in the United States of America. I see one topic, and I scroll up and down the websites, and I look at other people's streams, and you know what people are talking about. And honestly, guys, I would like to think that all the education, that movie that just came out called The Big Short,
awesome movie.
Did you see it?
Yes, unbelievable. Did one of the best jobs of actually talking about what Wall Street did to everybody's wealth that I've ever seen.
All right, so now you got this guy named Bernie Sanders that wants to go. He wants to reinstate Glass-Steagall. He wants the investment banks over there. He wants the commercial banks over here. He wants a wall in between them, which is what we used to have until Clinton got rid of it. You know, that's a baby step. You know, look what Standard Oil. Look at the monopoly they had in the early 20th century, and they broke them up. Doesn't mean that, you know, Rockefeller didn't make a ton of money for different reasons, but at least there was an effort to slow the locomotive that is just out of control. And, you know, when I look at someone like Bernie Sanders, I'm not saying he might be the next Obama. He might be lying through his teeth, but I don't think he is. I think Obama was prepared and presented, and he wasn't elected. And I think he's in reading his teleprompter, and he's doing exactly what the oligarchs want. I think Bernie plays by their rules, but I do think he wants to, and he sees the abuse in the banking system, which is maybe not the top piece of that pyramid, Dave, but it Scott, seems like at least he's bringing the conversation, and this movie did the same thing, that if you're going to change what's happening bad, if you're going to truly change it, you have to start with the banking system. He's the only guy talking about the banks.
But the movie was a pure, believe it or not, after all is said and done, the movie was a very pro-capitalism movie. It was not a socialist movie.
I'm not anti-capitalism. I'm anti-crony capitalism.
No, but Bernie Sanders is.
I think Bernie Sanders.
He's a self-proclaimed socialist.
And his largest donors are what's it called? Something interest?
Don't know. It's a bank. It's a bank.
No. You go join the police union. A union. They're all backed by unions, which still special interests is what I'm trying to say. That chocolate's kicking in.
Bernie Sanders is better as a senator than a presidential candidate. I like that he's in the Senate.
Why?
Because it's good for him to bring up some subjects that may be unpopular, but what he's going to do to fix them scares the crap out of me.
Well, see, but that's where he really has power, and this is why I can't believe Scott is saying that he's going to do this. He's not going to do shit.
I didn't say he's going to do anything. I said he's the only person talking about this. That's what I said.
No, he's not. No.
Okay, name another candidate that's talking.
Ron Paul, Rand Paul.
No, well, they're not running.
They've been
Rand Paul is, but Rand Paul,
decades.
You know, still wants to own a woman's vagina.
Regulation at all.
If he really wanted to make a difference, well, he can make a one sentence statement by saying, "Take your money out of the big banks and put it in a local credit union." The system would collapse overnight.
Oh, well, I don't think anybody wants that. What we need is a gradual transition to something that's better. Once you create, you know, a chaos, and you know, you're not helping anything. You're just basically you're creating a whole new set of problems rather than fixing one at a time. This is the only guy I see. And don't get me wrong. You know, if I had to vote today, Gary Johnson's now running, or Jill Stein, you know, probably more Gary. I'm not crazy about everything Jill's about. But I will say this. Those two people speak more to me than Bernie Sanders does. But let's face it, in the system that we have, you know, and the brutally controlled, manipulated system we have, to me, he's the only one person. And I'm not afraid of shaking up the system. Bring a little socialist thinking into something, see what happens. I'm not saying, you know, by the way, I'm not getting taxed at a 90% rate. I'm not some multi-billionaire moving all my companies to the Bahamas so I can have tax shelters. There's many ways to make this country better. I don't think Bernie Sanders is the answer. I think Bernie Sanders is at least of the seven or eight people that are somehow considered to be the next president. I think he's at least talking about two things, the out of control banking system and the plight of the average American. And that's what speaks to me. That's it.
So one of the things Dave touched on in reference to what you're talking about is Bernie Sanders is better in the Senate. So is Elizabeth Warren, because those are the people who have real power. The president does nothing but wave, make speeches, and he signs stuff, you know, whenever he's pressured the right way by his party or his constituents, basically. So I don't know,
Mr. Executive Order seems to be getting a lot done.
Yeah, and they're all done the second the next person comes into the office if he disagrees with any of them.
Well, he didn't get rid of any of Bush's, and he said he was gonna. Now he's tripled or quadrupled the amount. You know, that's what I'm saying is, you know, the president does have some power. I mean, I get it. He's a figurehead. But, you know, he is tightening the noose. And I didn't expect him to be that. Do you think Bernie Sanders, if elected, would go in and be that person? Do you think that, Ferris? Do you think?
No.
Okay. Well, what scares you? Dave?
I'm not scared.
I just don't think he would be the person to make any positive change, really.
Right. I don't think the Senate or the Congress is going to come up with laws that he'll pass that'll benefit the country.
So
that's where it originates.
Right. So what a president needs to do, he needs to steer both houses of government. He needs to steer the Congress and the Senate. That's where his influence lies.
Good point.
Bernie Sanders is going to come in and go, I'm tired of all you getting paid off by special interests and lobbyists. This is the law of the land. And they're all going to say, fuck you. And nothing's going to get done.
You should have seen his face when he did that.
No, you know, it is a good point because he's got no allies.
Right.
He's got none. He's got none on either side of the fake aisle.
And he's
One can argue that why Obama hasn't done more, really, like as far as through the process, is because he doesn't try to get a coalition and try to get allies.
No. What do you think Obamacare came from? That was a bipartisan setup.
That's his legacy. A lot of people fell on a sword too for that to happen.
Yeah, nobody fell on a sword.
Okay, Dave.
Who got taken out?
Half the Democratic congressmen.
Oh yeah, in 08. I mean, in 12? Yeah.
And now there's a Republican-controlled Congress, and where has Obamacare gone? Still there.
Do you think that hope is in the private sector? You know, with the billionaire that wants to make a machine that makes clean water, or, you know, Elon Musk saying, you know, you can save a lot of electricity putting this battery into your garage. And, you know, is it going to be the private sector that kind of makes life, I don't know, better, simply better, you know, I'm a fan of starting small. If you don't like the monolith and you can't get around it and you can't go over it, then do something locally. Go ahead.
Can I just bust a myth real quick, too, by the way, because I'm kind of getting tired of hearing about these executive orders, to be honest with you. Barack Obama has passed 226 executive orders. Bush, George Bush, 291. Clinton, 364. Ronald Reagan, 381. Jimmy Carter, 320.
All right.
Richard Nixon, 346. Lyndon Johnson, 325. Dwight Eisenhower, 484.
Hold on. I will counter that with other statistics. All right.
Franklin Roosevelt, 3,522.
Yeah, he was not a good
That's
man.
Dave's
anyway.
Favorite. That's Dave's favorite. I mean,
gold stealing.
Well, that's why you can only be president for two terms. Now that guy was so fucking popular, they wanted him for four.
No.
Enough
he
people
wasn't
in this
popular.
Country. Oh, yes, he was.
He rigged the third election, right? Because he said, "I won't run again." This is before the 17th or whatever amendment. I won't run again unless drafted. And then he engineered the draft. He actually went to the convention and had somebody go over the loudspeaker and say, let's get FDR in there. He engineered that whole thing, just like he stacked at the Supreme Court, just like he mowed through everything. That motherfucker was a tyrant. Anyway, back to my statistics. All right, the reason why Obama's got less executive orders is because Obama has a record of seven vetoes, whereas every other person that you mentioned has exponentially more, aside from Bush. So he didn't have to do as many executive orders because the Congress was writing, you know, the laws.
I mean, it doesn't matter if it's positive or it's negative. I'm just saying you can't say that he's gone out of control with executive orders when he hasn't even passed as many as.
The reason I said that was I read an article and it said that he had quadrupled the amount that Bush had done in the same basically 7 years. You know, Bush was in eight and they were counting a 7 year span for both of them. And they had said he had way outpaced them. But from what are you using for your stats there? Just so I know. Where's that at?
The actual government numbers.
It was like gov.net.
Barack Obama signed executive order 13489 through 13715.
Okay.
All right. So
executive order 13198 to 13488.
So here's the thing: is now you have to read the executive orders because, all right, the first executive order, which wasn't called an executive order back then, was actually making Thanksgiving Day a federal holiday.
Washington only did eight anyway total.
Right, but the thing is, it's an administrative thing, right? It's it wasn't a law; it's just an administrative thing. That's what executive orders really are. You know, we're going to do the Easter egg hunt on the White House lawn. That's an executive order. It's not, you know, we're going to, you know, make people jump over backwards to get a gun. It's that they can't rule or legislate by one person. That breaks the democratic process. So you got to look at the actual list themselves. Maybe 200 of them were benign.
I don't have to actually look at any list, but I just have to say that when people say that there's more executive orders under Obama than Bush, they're just not telling the truth.
No, well, yeah, okay. I'm not fighting you on that.
That was my only point.
Okay.
Is it because of what those executive orders are?
No, it's because he's black.
he's a Negro.
Yeah, but he's... Yeah.
I'm sorry. It was just too easy.
But you're right. You're right. I mean, you know, it's so I never bring that into a conversation. I don't care what color you people are. Neither do you two. But
no, I'm just joking.
No, really. But I mean, honestly, you're not joking.
Right.
Because that, you know, if you get to the percentage of people that don't like him, yeah, what is it? 20, 30, 40% are, you know, quietly, partially racist. And they just don't like a black man in that office as much as they wouldn't like a woman.
They use the phrase "those people" a lot.
Yeah, and my mom used to use that. She used to say they're moving in, and I go who? And she'd say those people, and I go, Mom, why are you whispering? She'd whisper it in her own living room. Those people, and I go, oh, you mean blacks? Yes, those people. They're moving into the neighborhood. I was like, wow, Mom, you are definitely from a different generation. So I'm looking for hope. I would like to think that the private sector, maybe locally, you know, when you energy's levels, you know, if you get someone who can circumvent big coal, big carbon, big natural gas, fracking, that's another thing. People calling out fracking. So maybe there'll be some progress made there little by little, but it's all still stems from the same dollar bill. It all stems from the same situation. If I'm going to see progress in this country, because you can't turn to the media, we know they're a skeleton. You know, they're horrible.
I've ever seen them.
It's brutal. I mean, I don't even watch news on television anymore. I will go to YouTube and I will go to specific channels to see if a story was covered and watch a little 5 or 10 minute vignette about those things. But it used to be the media was calling out government, but now they're lockstep every step of the way. So I'm looking for progress, and neither of you have cheered me up. Sorry. I sat around the other day, and I was like, you know, it's great doing the show. And I look on the internet, and I see so many people with YouTube channels, and there's podcasts, and there's broadcasts, and there's all these. You go into one Facebook page, there's 35,000 members that are questioning one scenario or another, you know, from 9/11 to Sandy Hook. People are, you know, looking into things. And I always say to myself, knowledge is power. But I don't see our generation making that change. I think it's the next one.
But I agree. And I
think it's going to hit rock bottom between now and then.
Well, I think a lot of it was economic in nature. I think the 90s were getting tense and that people were starting to think twice and they were starting to kind of rise up. And then all of a sudden we had wars. Then we had terror, the age of terror, because we live in the age of terror now. And, you know, then Wall Street basically cashing out everybody's assets in the entire country. So you have broke, war-weary people who feel powerless, broke, and scared. And what are they going to do?
Dave, just look at the incremental, you know, Homeland Security and just moving through an airport. And George Carlin said, no, they haven't caught one bomber. It's a scam. It's a multi-tiered billion-dollar industry. I mean, one of those X-ray machines goes for $280,000. So there's a ton of industry behind Homeland Security. But look at how quickly people got into lockstep and don't want to make waves at an airport. And I think that's a, you know, kind of a microcosm look at the macro, which is the whole country. And I keep seeing people lower their head. Thank you, sir. May I have another? Please, may I have my porridge? So many people are attached to government checks now, you know, whether it's a local, state, or federal government check that they receive, whether it's, you know, their actual paycheck. So many people are attached to that tit, Dave. Nobody's rocking. Not nobody. A small fraction of people are actually rocking the boat. But when you go on social media, you see a lot of. You see a lot of discourse. You see a lot of people arguing back and forth about topics, but what's it leading to? I don't see it leading anywhere. And I've been doing this since 2004.
All right. Well, we have history on our side, so we know what happens to an empire that gets all high and mighty. Empires don't get better, Scott. They fail.
Yeah, they crumble under their own hubris. You're right.
Right. And that's what's going to happen to us. China is positioning itself to be a world leader. They're trying to get the yuan. They already got the yuan in the bucket of the SDR rights in the bank, international, what is it called? The money.
IMF.
IMF, right.
Yeah.
Or the World Bank. And they're buying more physical gold than any other country.
Look what happened to our stock market when China had bad reports the other day.
Yeah, but that's BS, all right? Their stock market's going down the same reason our stock market goes down. Last Friday, it went up, and ours went down Monday. So that's bullshit. Ben wants to say something.
No, I was just giving you a thumbs up. Oh, exactly right.
Right, yeah. So they will tell you, oh, because North Korea set off a bomb, that's why the stock market went down. They'll never tell you the truth.
Profit-taking.
Well, it's profit-taking or manipulation. I mean, Jesus Christ, yeah. A barrel of oil is $31. What is it, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago? It was $150. If you can't figure out that that's manipulated and there's the free market is gone, then you're blind.
Of course it's manipulated. If you're, you know, some brand-new algae fuel company, because I remember watching a report, gas was up at about $4.25 a gallon, and I watched a report on algae fuels, you know, me and that topic. And at that point, they were at about $8 a gallon. They said, we're not quite competitive yet, but in a couple of years, we hope to produce our gasoline from algae produced and you know, biofuels, jet fuel, everything that comes from it, that company. And we feel we'll be competitive in the marketplace. Well, if that's what Rockefeller did. You know, in the early 20th century, Standard Oil either bought you out or they completely lowered their prices and made you mm-hmm. disappear. I think that's what's happening. I think that's why oil is so easy to come by now. Because, again, Dave, you're right. They control the spigot. They control the imports. Some of these tankers sit offshore for 6 months at a time until the price goes up. Then they move into port. I mean, there's a system behind it. But they're trying to keep that monopoly. What is Saudi Arabia going to do if we can produce our own biofuels? What are they going to do? What is Kuwait going to do? What is Dubai going to do? They have to crush any competitors or buy them out, which they've been doing. What are we down to? Four mm-hmm. oil companies now, something like that? Four to six?
I don't know.
Something like that? Know. Or what are we seeing now? Bottom out the prices, and any company that's trying to bring anything to market that's even competitive to oil they'll wait you out. They'll wait you out for 2 or 3 years, and if you can sell a gallon of gas at $8 a gallon, God bless you. I love the algae fuel, but you're never going to be able to compete. You're never going to be competitive in a, like you guys are saying, marketplace. And Dave, you're right. It is manipulated. So what happens? What happens locally? That's why I'm such a big fan of local. I think local towns, local communities, local streets, and then the town, and then the community, and then the county, and then the state. I think we can bring ourselves to a higher standard of living and a better world if we start producing our own fuels, if we start producing our own electricity, if we start doing collecting our own water, growing our own local foods, bringing all of the things that we always rely on these mega corporations to do for us, and we start doing it, because you can't beat them on their playing field, but maybe you can bring them to your playing field.
Well, you can't, because here in the state of Florida, you can't be off-grid.
You can still have solar power. You just have to feed back into the grid.
Yeah, right. You have to be connected to the grid.
And they get
but you don't have to use their electricity.
Right. They get to tell you how much they're going to sell you the kilowatt hour, but they also tell you how much they'll buy it back from you. You can't sell it to your neighbor. You have to sell it back to them.
So, yeah, and it's always at least – it's net metering.
You have to be on the sewer system.
Yeah.
You have to be hooked up. You have to be on grid. You cannot – be self-sufficient. And then let's just say
They're the pimp, Dave.
Exactly. So what happens is, instead of other companies buy out other companies to stifle the competition, and the government actually makes laws to help out their friends that are already in business, and they stifle. Like, look at all the stuff, the lawsuits that are going on. There's a couple lawsuits across the country about Uber, you know? That is a completely voluntary setup, and they become a billion-dollar company worldwide, because and they don't own a single car. They just facilitate, you know, sharing, you know, just like Alibaba. They don't produce anything. They just know how to make hook people up with another person, you know, and that's what really is going to break this paradigm.
Well, that's the sharing. I think you said that. In other words, it will be the private industry. It will be the private sector that says, you know, like Uber, we're going to do things on our own. And if you want us to stop, take us to court and so on and so forth. I love Uber. I love what they're being, you know, I'd like to see 20 different business models of Uber done in different categories to challenge the status quo. But again, that's still local, Dave. That's the guy, you know, I got my Uber app. Right. I, you know, the guy lives three blocks up. He's driving around a Saturday night. All of a sudden his phone rings. He's got a client. Boom. He drives me down to the local brewery in St. Pete. He makes his money. I get, you know, they take it out of the account, la, la, la. That doesn't go through anybody except me and that company and that guy. It doesn't go anywhere else. Right. So do that with more companies. But you're saying there are too many regulations, too many state regulations, too many local regulations, where you could never break free of that to do it on your own. Is that what you're saying?
All right. So, Scott, you live close to downtown St. Pete, right? Mm-hmm. Suppose you want to open up a health food bakery, non-GMO, non-gluten bakery. What are the steps that you have to do to open that up?
Yuck, no gluten and no GMO? I'm out.
It fits in with downtown.
You know what's
going to
be called, Ferris? It's going to be called A Taste of Cardboard. Come on, that's a joke.
Missed it.
We cut out.
It's going to be called A Taste of Cardboard.
Exactly. All right. That's irrelevant. What I'm talking about is you don't just find the storefront, rent it, and buy baking equipment. You got to get the Board of Health in there. You got to get insurance. Yeah. You got to get all these things, and then you got to get your food tested and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, the barrier of entry is ridiculously high. Whereas in, let's say, Hong Kong, it's very low. And also here in this country, they license you to do things. In Hong Kong, they're like, no, you could start a business up in an hour. And they don't tax you. They bother you. Like, go ahead, have at it. And that's why a place.
Dog on a stick?
That's why there's no. They don't have any natural resource in Hong Kong, but yet it's one of the most richest places on the planet because of the business, the lack of legislation in that place. And you can see this all over the place. Singapore, Abu Dhabi, you know, they have all these places where the businesses are allowed to flourish. And that's where the money's at.
So
right now it is.
So maybe I'm thinking private land, communities or communes or something where it's you do it within your own. You have your own unpasteurized milk. You grow your own vegetables. I know. That's what I'm saying. I get it. You know, all that stuff that is, quote, illegal, unquote. is there a way to do that without the government having a say in what you're doing unless you do it voluntarily within a community, a commune? In other words, not even within the community, because you're right, Dave. You know, I'm asking some rhetorical questions tonight because I've sat around over the last couple of months. You get a lot of time to think, and I'm like, I see a ton of discourse. I see a lot of people passionate about issues, you know, GMOs over here, and people are talking about vaccines, and people are talking about – there's still people that are very passionate about things like 9/11 or Sandy Hook, or people are looking into things. And I do see people changing their mind about stuff, and I have personal friends – I think I mentioned this in a show a couple of weeks ago that have changed their mind about things. So I see the knowledge is growing, and if knowledge is power, then eventually we're going to get to a point where enough people not only realize, Ferris, that the system is rigged, but are tired of it and are willing to risk some comfort zone for a period of time. Because, you know, we see riots in Greece, or we see riots elsewhere. Those people have been around for 5,000 years. Okay, so those people aren't afraid of a good fight. Now, it doesn't mean they're winning their fights. They still got their fucking austerity shoved up their ass, unfortunately. But at least there is a flame. In this country, I just don't see it. I just think we're too young. I think we're spoiled. I think we're spoiled. I think we...
That's a piece of it.
We really are.
That is a piece of it. But the other piece of it is, you know, things as they are right now, this country is not going to change for the better by any kind of violent uprising or revolution. It's just not going to. We're not going to transform until we have some figure, event, culture, person, movement that paves a path to somewhere better. And that's only going to be done with cooperation and collaboration with some kind of infrastructure. I'm sorry, Dave, but the anarchists are not going to be winning anytime soon.
Well, that's more of a communal thinking anyways. An anarchist, a community would be, you know, everyone self-governs, self-rules. Dave, and, you know, let's say there's 100 people that have some land and they all do that. Is there a figurehead? Is there even a Congress? Is there even, you know, if you break that down, is there any structure at all to that at all?
Yeah, it's voluntary structure. Let's just say everybody gets together right on this land. You know, there's 10 families, and each family has 10 people in it. And the heads of the family get together. Right, you're good at this. You're good at this. Does everybody agree that he could do the farming? Does everybody agree that he could do the housework?
We used to have one of those. They were called small towns.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was and how did you all right, let's go back to policing. How did they police that? They just hired they hired somebody, right? They all just
so maybe urbanization's the problem.
Right. But here's the thing is if I was paying, this is 300 years ago and I was paying somebody's 200 years ago and I was paying somebody's salary, right? And I walk out of the bar drunk with a fishing pole and my dog that's not unleashed, you think they're gonna bother me? No, they're going to put me in the car and take me home because I'm literally paying their paycheck. They're not going to bust my chops for little things. What they will do is the other people to get to, let's say I get drunk and I start breaking somebody's window and I steal shit. Yeah, then they're going to come after me because I actually I created a crime. Me, I feel that it's not a crime if there's no victim.
And I'm with you. I agree. I'm with you. Of course. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And if people start having that mindset, no victim, no crime, they'll see things like, wait a minute, who's the victim when I do 75 miles an hour in a 50?
Right? No victim, no crime.
Right. Yeah. I can't. Exactly.
No victim, no crime.
You know, once people get that mindset, they'll start seeing things a little bit differently. Like, hey, wait a minute. Yeah. Why are they hassling those kids with their pants down to their ass?
Dave.
I don't like it, but I'm not going to arrest anybody for it.
You get a ticket for driving 70 miles an hour because an actuary that works for the insurance company said that when people drive 70 miles an hour or faster, it costs our company more money.
Yeah. When the lowest common denominator driver drives 70 miles an hour, there's absolutely no consideration for talent.
Right.
Or skill level.
Yes, you're correct.
I've been pulled over a shitload here in Tampa or here in Florida.
Well, DUI doesn't take tolerance into consideration.
Yeah. And, you know, how many people do they arrest for DWI or DUI, and how many accidents are there, right? How many times? Look, we are all guilty of drunk driving, right? Probably some in the past 4 hours.
Hey, by the way, the Rams are moving to L.A.
Again? Didn't they start out there?
I
distinctly remember one of my friends in Catholic school.
So the people in St. Louis have even more to be excited about in their crumbling city. Wow. Lovely. That's on my television right now. Is the revolution, guys, is it going to be something physical, man in the streets with guns, like, you know, this lame-ass Oregon thing that's going on? Or will it be cybers? Will it be hackers? Will it be people who build drone jammers and make
Mr.
them
Robot.
Crash? You know, what, you know, will it be the geeks that lead a revolution in our country?
The geeks are absolutely going to have influence over it, but it's not going to be them leading it. They'll be facilitating or creating the medium.
Well, they already have, right? The geeks have already given us the pathway of doing these things, but yet it gets shunned. You know, again, the Silk Road, people didn't like the fact that people were voluntarily purchasing drugs and other
a lot of
things.
Drugs.
Right, whatever it happened to be,
Sure.
And it's very much like Uber or eBay. You got a rating. If your drugs were good, they gave you a good rating. If you were a good customer, they gave you a good rating. So now, you know, a 5-star client and a 5-star salesperson.
Don't be peddling that dirt weed here, boy.
Exactly. So that's everything was good. And, you know, you made sure that, oh, shit, I got sick. You know, you mark that down. Your stuff sucks. You know, so other people know not to. You don't get that with the current drug dealers. You know, and the second thing is,
yeah, it's like Sally gives horrible head. Don't call her back.
The second thing that the geeks have given us that you poo poo all the time is a alternative currency. That
I
is
poo poo alternative currency.
I do. I always do.
You always poop on me about Bitcoin.
No, I don't poop on you about Bitcoin. I basically say, what's the difference between Bitcoin and the American dollar? Because Bitcoin is based on the dollar.
No, it's not.
Sure it is.
It is not.
If I asked you what your Bitcoin was worth right now, how would you answer that question?
I could tell you it's in USD. I could tell you in all kinds of currencies. It's a conversion. It's not tagged to the dollar. If you're saying everything's tagged, then so is gold. Because how much is the price of gold right now?
No, Bitcoin, anytime I've asked anybody what's it worth, they'll go, oh, $600.
Right.
Well, that's the frame of reference.
Right.
All right. So
one Bitcoin is worth one Bitcoin.
So how is it not tagged to the dollar? How is it not, you know?
It's not tagged to the dollar. You're converting it. What's it. When you ask what's it worth, when you're asking what's one Bitcoin worth, you're asking what's it worth against the dollar.
Would you buy a gun on the Silk Road with Bitcoin?
That was one of the things they forbid. It's like asking you, what's the value of a dollar?
In Thailand, how much is a Bitcoin worth? Is it a blowjob and two hand jobs or two blowjobs and one hand job?
Oh, you probably buy the whole thing.
They're having the Bitcoin Ladyboy special.
Just to give you an idea. Just to give you an idea. I bought, about 8 months ago to a year ago, I bought a quarter Bitcoin from Dave Barletta, actually. I think he's listening to us, right? And I spent... so it was worth $50. I spent $40 on an Amazon thing, right? I was able to buy something from Amazon. So I had less than $10 left, right? Currently, that 0.05 Bitcoin is worth $25. So I'm almost like I'm halfway back to the amount of money that I spent, and I still got products and services from it. I love Bitcoin.
We noticed.
Right. And it's right. So could you imagine if Bitcoin was the only current, was the global currency, and all we dealt was Bitcoin? There'd be no.
I'd be just as broke as I am now.
I kind of think of the same thing. Like,
no, it's
based in a computer, it's easily hacked.
It's not.
Oh, come on.
This is the thing that you don't
Bitcoin
know.
Purses were hacked, what, a year ago? No. 2 years
online
ago?
Online purses, online wallets. It's like online banking.
Well, it's an online currency, isn't it?
No. It uses the internet to communicate, but my wallet is on my computer. Actually, my current wallet's on my cell phone.
So if your computer crashes, you lose all your money?
No. I have it backed up. Here's the thing about Bitcoin. You're actually not – you don't get a – like let's call it a token. You don't
Bitcoin
download
smugglers
it.
Using like, you know, just tiny little thumb drives and going over county lines and smuggling Bitcoin.
You don't even have to do that. You could send yourself an encrypted thing. Anyway, it's not an actual token that you download on your computer. If you lose that, you lose. What it is it's an entry in a online ledger, right?
Okay.
So you have to have, let's call it the page number so that you could say, all right, it's like very first warehouse receipts, you know? If you lost that warehouse receipt, You lost your money. But if you had a backup copy of it and you knew how much, then you could trade. Same thing with Bitcoin. It's just the code to a ledger entering. And you could have that on three or four different computers. I have them backed up on three different computers.
Basically, what gives Bitcoin its value is I have some, you have some. I have a used cassette deck I want to sell, and I want to sell it for one Bitcoin. And you and me agree that that is the exchange device that we right. give value to. You know, Native Americans used to make coins right. out of money and beads. Remember, beads meant a lot to them. So it's all about what you give the value to. Now, what's to say that the moment Bitcoin starts to take off, there is, and I know there's been quite a few cryptocurrencies that have showed up and disappeared in a hurry. What's to say there's not five more? And I'm not against that. You know, maybe maybe we need five cryptocurrencies to balance it out. And I don't know. But what I do know is it's still based on anytime you say anything to anybody, go, what's it worth?
No,
oh, it's
exactly.
worth $52.
Right. What's it worth compared to? Because, again, why would I ask you, what is $10 worth? Because you know what it's worth, $10 or a dollar. Asking what a Bitcoin is
worth. It's like 10,000 euros.
You're asking.
Actually, it's the other way around. The euro's worth more than the dollar.
Do you understand what I'm trying to say?
Yes,
here?
I know exactly. I do. I get you. Yeah, I know what you're saying, Dave. It's basically, when someone says dollars, it's simply you're comparing this pile of worth to a certain pile of worth known as the dollar.
Right. When you ask,
I get it. I get it. I know.
Okay.
I get it. Hey guys, let's do. I want to do a Carlin's Corner, and I want to play a track. I want your opinion, Ferris, first of all, on two things: Lemmy and David Bowie. How about that, man?
All right. Hey, just so you know, the currency switch, the dollar is 0.92 euros now. They're really close.
Okay, because, the euro was outpacing it last time I looked, but I haven't looked at it.
Yeah, for a while
months.
It was.
I haven't
it still
yet.
Is technically because it's 0.92.
Okay. Well, pretty soon they'll all be worth the same thing. How many countries are in the EU now? It used to be like 15. It's like 30 now.
A lot of them, yeah.
Yeah, there's like, I think they've doubled the amount of countries in the EU. And, of course, that's them sucking those countries into the same coin.
The industrialized smart countries, they've realized that they could mitigate their euro exposure and risk to leverage by maintaining a local currency as well. That's what England does. They have a pound and
right.
they're on the euro.
Right.
And they use it to play monetary policy games so they could mitigate any exposure to leverage from Germany like everybody else.
Right.
So it's
China's got the same thing. They have a
doesn't Germany
currency?
Germany has their own coins too still as well, no?
Yeah.
They have the Deutsche
Yes,
Mark.
But they usually use the euro to out leverage everybody else based on productivity, but that's
okay. So give me just dumb it down for me here and literally give me an example of what that leverage is and how they would use one currency against the other.
Okay, so when you're on a standard of currency,
mm-hmm. Let's say the euro. And you're England.
Right. So let's use Greece. Okay. So Greece basically had to buy into the euro, right? So by buying into that euro, they said, okay, how much float do you have out there? Like if they were going to go to us and say, how many trillions do you have in circulation right now in the US dollars, let's say, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they would say, if you have, a trillion drachma, let's say, you have to give us your trillion drachma. Okay. And in return, we're going to give you 100 million euro.
That's leveraging that drachma by a certain number.
Well, it's more than that, though. It's also we're going to use that and your productivity of your economy is going to have to keep a certain pace so that you can maintain a healthy exchange between your currency and our euro base as a standard. The problem is that when you have currencies like Germany who are more industrialized and have higher output efficiency and what do they call it? What's it called? Productivity.
Like a GNP?
Right. Productivity and GDP and all that stuff.
Okay.
They tend to exponentially as they grow because they're so much bigger, even though they grow 1%, and let's say Greece grows 5%, because the base and the leverage of the investment is so much bigger, Greece still owes them more money.
Well, basically, it is what you just described to me is just another way of leveraging and creating debt and getting that yes. country in debt and making sure they're in debt. Yeah, whether it's called a drachma or a euro or a dollar,
right?
It's all about making sure that there is a debt.
Right, and but Greece was naive in their fiscal policy, and they also have
the Greeks voted it down, and then they went and did it anyway.
Well, they voted it down like years after they already agreed to
it. I'm talking about the austerity vote. Like what? A year ago?
Okay, so that's different. So the austerity vote is different. The austerity vote was
another loan.
They owed Germany basically a shit ton of money because they got screwed by entering in the eurozone. And then finally Germany said enough is enough. You need to pay us our money. Give me my money, man.
Okay. Gotcha.
And they said, you don't have enough money to pay for your social programs or your government. We've been funding your government. So you need to cut benefits and services and raise your retirement age because you're not paying us enough money.
Okay.
That's when Greece said, screw you. We're not changing anything. You took advantage of us. This is not a good deal.
Yep.
Right?
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's when they voted against austerity. They were already on the euro. Then the prime minister threatened to go back on the drachma and abandon the euro.
Yes, I remember. He was replaced with the
Goldman Sachs executive.
That's right. Okay. That's right. I was like, wait a minute. They were going to say no to whether the IMF or whatever the bank was.
Right.
And they were going to say, no, thank you. We'll do it on our own. But I never understood what do it on our own would mean. Does that mean we're going to abandon the euro
and we'll pay you back in drachma at our rate after we manipulate our currency value back up to where we want it to be?
And they'd be debt free. They would. In other words, they'd control their own currency.
Right. So,
but it would take them a while to do that.
It would. But it would still be easier for them to manipulate because they control their own currency policy, their monetary policy. See, the problem with jumping into a eurozone for some of these either smaller economies or economies that are more vulnerable to recession, like a Greece or an Italy, where the tourism has a very unhealthy, heavy percentage of weight, which is very vulnerable to recession. So that's why they were in trouble, because once you relinquish your monetary policy, you don't get to say how your inflation or deflation or any way that you use your money or lend your money works. And that's really what sunk Greece, is that they had a really horrible, perfect storm of things happen. They're a smaller economy. There were several recessions, the banking crisis.
Were they tied to like credit default swaps and the mortgage issues? Like, were they tied to what happened to us in 2008?
Everybody was tied to a degree. The problem is that any exposure they had a greater effect because their economy was already hurt more by the recession itself rather than actually the stealing of profits by Wall Street.
Their money problems weren't overspending. Their money problems were they basically didn't have any type of decent GDP. In other words,
their GDP was affected negatively at the height of their leverage. Like, that's the thing. It's everything's leverage, right? If you have momentum in a healthy economy, you can pay a lot more. And as that economy shrinks, you could still have the same level of risk. But if your economy is shrinking and you're low on cash, you still have to pay out those bills. And that's more the type of scenario that Greece had, is that their economy shrunk and they just recently lost control of their monetary policy. So they couldn't use other countermeasures.
Okay. Dave, let me ask you this. The one world currency. Tell me why it's good.
Well, there'd be nothing to fight over. There would be no tariffs, because there would be one world currency.
Yep.
And everybody's cost of living will go, or their living expenses will even out. You know, whereas, well, this is theoretic.
Is there still debt attached to this one world currency? There must be.
Well, no. If it's Bitcoin, no. But, you know, if there is a government-controlled or UN-controlled one-world government or one currency, of course they're going to be able to inflate it by, you know, adding zeros at the end of something.
Sure, okay. All right, so
the thing that scares me about that, though, is it's similar to, like, the Obamacare principle, right? The Obamacare principle spreads the peanut butter. So it says, hey, now everybody has coverage. The problem is people that had coverage in the first place now have shittier coverage and pay more for it.
Mm-hmm.
So the
socialism.
Same thing with you.
Socialism.
Right. So the same thing with you right now is if we had a global currency, then the third world countries would live way more comfortably and we would really be screwed.
Yeah, we'd drop. Yeah, sure we would. Your buying power goes down. I mean, as much as you want, you know, prosperity for the entire world, it's a question of haves and have nots. If the have nots end up with more, then the haves have less. It's just, you know, I'm kind of with you.
Right, right, but it's going to bring other people up, you know, because you know.
But those people aren't us.
Yeah, but right, but there's not. Well, it could be because maybe the dollar isn't the one world currency. It might be, you know, the yuan in 30 years, and it's gold backed. So you can't make them. The whole reason, I don't know if most people don't know this, but the whole reason why it was attached to gold is so that you couldn't overproduce the dollar because it,
right.
You know, it was a one for one ratio between. Yeah,
we started doing that in the 60s, late 60s.
Right. But
we started printing way more than we had gold. That's where we got into trouble.
Yep.
Well, that's the double edged sword that is fractionary banking, right? You can afford to build a skyscraper now, but also money is fake.
Yes.
Right.
All right, guys, why don't you head to the bathroom? By the way, for Carlin's Corner tonight, Doug Stanhope, awesome. his infamous speech on the fishing license. Yes, exactly. It's all about me. It's all about me. It's all about me. We'll come back. We're going to play a tune, too. I got this cool little mashup of a David Bowie song, a whole bunch of different people from all around the world, and I think it was the Huffington Post put together a real cool mashup of Space Oddity by David Bowie. So we'll do that. We'll do Carlin's Corner and the tune, and we'll come back for about a little bit more than a half hour with Ferris and Ford Toad right here on Dangerous Conversation.
Scott Ledger.
Hey, this is Trip from Orlando. You're listening to Dangerous Conversation with Scott Ledger.
I mean, this is a gab fest. Yuck, 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 yuck.
Dangerous Conversation.
Hey, Old Man River, zip it or I'll break your hip.
Scott Ledger.
But I haven't tried my Wolfman Jack Lady's shaver yet.
Dangerous Conversation.
You don't live in a free country. You got the flag on your shirt there. Oh, it's upside down. It's not a free country. You're born free. I mean, you're born absolutely free, except for laws of nature. Those, if you drink, you get drunk. That's a law. If you get old, you die. That's a law, too. If you sit on a tack, you will bleed from the ass. These are the only laws that you're born with, and any government just fucks you out of that type of freedom. If you really think you're free tonight, you, hero, Officer Bob, you're a free man. You live in a free country. But you go upstairs, you take your own beer you risked your life for. You sit on the hood of your monster truck in the parking lot, drink your beer, and see how long it is before actual veteran cops come by and pound on you with truncheons on the kidneys to show, why can't I do it? I'm just having a beer. I don't know. That's the law, though. You don't fuck around. You can't drive down the street without a seatbelt on. Why not? I don't know. You're going to put on a helmet. You can't sit in your own backyard naked, your own filthy, dirty flesh that you're born with. You know that body you carry around? Filthy. You can't sit up. Why not? I don't know. That's just the way it is. Mother! You're not free. You're not free in the least. You need a diploma in this country to cut hair. You're free. You need to keep your tray in an upright and locked position during takeoff. It's not just a hack premise. It's a fucking felony. And Cunty the Hero Sky Cunt will fucking throw you off the plane as a terrorist for going, why do I have to have this? This doesn't make sense. They say if you give a man a fish, he'll eat for a day. But if you teach a man to fish, then he's got to get a fishing license, but he doesn't have any money. So he's got to get a job, and he has to get into the Social Security system and pay taxes. And now you're going to audit the poor cocksucker, because he's not really good with math. You pull the IRS van up to your house, he'll take all your shit. He'll take your Black Velvet Elvis and your Batman toothbrush and your penis pump, and that all goes up for auction with the burden of proof on you, because you forgot to carry the one, because you were just worried about eating a fucking fish, and you couldn't even cook the fish because you needed a permit for an open flame. And then the health department is going to start asking you a lot of questions about where are you going to dump the scales and the guts. This is not a sanitary environment. And ladies and gentlemen, if you get it, if you get sick of it all at the end of the day, not even legal to kill yourself in this country. Thanks again, John Ashcroft, you weird Bible addict, can't even handle his own drug. You were born free, you got fucked out of half of it, and you wave a flag celebrating.
Hey, don't hold back.
You got an argument?
No, keep going.
The only true freedom that you find is when you realize and come to terms with the fact that you are completely and unapologetically fucked. And then you are free to float around the system.
Thanks for listening to DC.
This is Abby Martin from RTTV, Media Roots, Project Censored. And you're listening to Dangerous Conversation.
This is real radio.
Hey, what's up? This is Adam Armstrong from Rebel Inc., and you're listening to Dangerous Conversation.
Here's Ledge.
Hey, this is Chuck from Iowa. You're listening to Dangerous Conversations with the Ledge, and I'm almost high as a chemtrail.
Yeah. Here's Scott Ledger.
Ground control to Major Tom. Take your protein pills and put your helmet on.
10.
Ground control to Major Tom.
8. 7.
Commencing countdown, engines on. Check ignition.
Is it possible for you to shut the fuck up for 10 seconds?
Sex and drugs and women being set on fire.
I am a grandmaster dialectician.
You know, you guys, you're supposed to be so good at listening, you can't even remember what I said to you 2 seconds ago.
Scott Ledger.
Dangerous Conversation.
Because we've got Ferris and Dave, and so... first of all, great to do some radio with you too. specifically
Ben.
Yeah,
great to be here.
Yeah, well, because I had Dave last week, and Dave's never at a loss for words. I love intellect. I love opinions. I always learn, and I think it's very, very important to understand that in a good conversation, if you do a good job of listening, you might be able to teach something, but you'll be able to learn too. And that's what I always enjoyed about the crew aspect of doing a show was, you know, when you had three or four, sometimes even five opinions in a room, it not only made for entertaining radio, of course, but it also made for very informative. And I want to ask you guys about protest. I'm a big fan of protest. We have, you know, friends that have protested. I've been to a place or two and held up a picket sign, and I've not picket sign, but also a sign. And, you know, way back in 2005, I was holding signs that said investigate 9/11 on US 60 in downtown Tampa, right in front of Channel 13. And, you know, some people are flipping the bird at you and some people are honking their horns. And I always felt if you can get engaged in some type of protest, it's a good thing. It's certainly what the amendments are built around, the Constitution. It is the free speech. It is the First Amendment. But the reason I ask this is because people want their protest to be on their palate. They, you know, if you're on the left, they want you to, you know, they don't want you to have a gun strapped to your hip and stand in a protest line. But that's okay on the right. That's okay in Oregon. That's okay with the Bundys. I guess I'll go to Ferris first. It seems that if the protest isn't your protest, and if it's not the way you do things, it is constantly berated. Now, it's berated by what I consider your own team members. You know, if you're angry at your government and you choose Occupy Wall Street, or if you're angry at your government and you choose to do what's happening in Oregon, the end game, what you're hoping for is governmental change. What you're hoping to is bring attention to something. Now, lots of people protest for selfish reasons. I don't want to pay my taxes, Bureau of Land Management.
Says, oh, wait.
Okay, well, just wait. I'm not saying selfish. I'm saying people get involved because their life is affected. Okay, there's something about their life they don't like. That's why they become involved. That's why they'll go and do their protesting. Occupy Wall Street, a lot of people lost money. Okay, not everybody. But do you understand what I'm saying here is it doesn't matter. I mean, I'm kind of agnostic politically. I don't attach myself. So when I sit back and I look at how the left attacks the right attacks the left, and, you know, and it don't get me wrong, it doesn't mean I agree with what's going on in Oregon, but I do agree with people organizing a protest. No one's getting hurt. No one's pulling triggers. I mean, the left is, oh, yeah, there's going to be a shootout. And I get it. You know, you can criticize the way people are doing things, but guess what? At the end of the day, to me, they're on your team.
Yeah.
One's a quarterback, one's a lineman, one's a running back, one's a wide receiver. They all have different roles, but they all have the same. And that's how I view it. And it's very discouraging to see how quickly. Don't get me wrong. It needs to be scrutinized. These things, you know, things need to be scrutinized, Ferris. But I see no unity at all. I don't see any. I don't see solidarity. Remember when was it Lefluenza? Is that not Lefluenza? What was his name? And the leader in Poland.
Lech Walesa.
Lech Walesa. Yeah. Solidarity. What was he? He got the unions together. He got a lot of people that were on different pages together. And that's bam. That's when they all were like rowing together and watch what happened. I mean, it might have been artificial. It could have been manipulated. But at least in my world, it was like, wow, these people are on two different sides of an aisle coming together. I don't see that in our country, Ferris. I don't see it, man.
That's because it doesn't sell newspapers or gets hits on web pages. But, you know, let's take this Oregon protest, right? You could say already that it's been wildly successful because the amount of discussion point that has come from that protest is unreal.
That's my point.
Here's the thing.
No such thing as bad press unless someone dies. Right. Okay? You know what I'm saying?
Well, so, and there's a couple of weird, odd, results of this protest. So number one, like, I think anything the Bundys are involved in is always selfish and it's an ulterior motive.
It's
anyway,
more about them than the greater cause.
Well, you know, here's the deal. It's one thing to support the Second Amendment, and I do, but it's another thing to say, because I support the Second Amendment, I'm just going to wave a gun in someone's face every fucking time I get a chance to do so. And I don't think that's right. And I don't really care if you agree or not. That's what I think. I think those are those people. I think they are that type of person. Now, what they're arguing over is something that is adjacent to the examples that they're using as overreach.
Is it mineral rights by any chance?
No, it's the Bureau of Land Management overstepping and abusing their power and jurisdiction. And they have actually some legitimate points in their gripe. And they've started the discussion. So that's the good point. And I would actually argue in this case, and now here's the thing, and this is where I'm not actually contradicting myself. I'm just saying that because they have guns, I would argue that that's why there hasn't been violence and that's why nobody's been shot.
Damn, Skippy.
I'm going to agree as well.
And I think it's because in that circumstance, having a gun as the protester, you're hitting fast forward and you're saying, enough of this other bullshit. We're both armed. We're both have on the other side of an argument. This doesn't have to be violent. We're just both equally equipped, and it's going to be inconvenient for you to come in here in a firestorm.
If you bring in the Waco tanks, you're going to meet a resistance.
Right. So that's the kind of contradictory statement part that I'm saying is, even though I think the Bundys are kind of dicks like that, I think in that particular case, it was actually the right call to have a gun.
Dave, why can't the left see what Ferris just talked about?
Because of cognitive dissonance. You know, they think that guns are bad and there's nothing you could tell them that will change that until they get robbed.
Okay, that's a very blanket statement. I'm talking about the specifics.
It's more than that, though.
Yeah,
we're all from New York.
But it's more than that. If they're victims of gun violence, they blame the gun.
Right.
Because the criminal is just a poor victim, Dave.
Yeah, yeah. He grew up in a bad neighborhood. It's all the gun's fault.
It's true.
Okay, so will we ever see... never mind. I can't phrase it that way. See, I like protest. Okay, as long as no one's being hurt, as long as property's not being damaged. Okay, I like it. I loved Occupied and like what happened in Oakland. But who knows if that could have been agent provocateurs? You don't know.
They're trying to make it legal, though.
Well, to make them look bad, to basically make them look bad. Well, we have protest zones. I mean, you can see what if I was old. I wasn't quite old enough to understand Vietnam, but I do remember the music and the protests. Mm-hmm. And they were peaceful, and they used Martin Luther King, and they used Gandhi, and they used those type of, nonviolent resistance, you know, sit-ins inside of colleges and blocking off streets. Okay, that's the left's way of doing thing. The right isn't pulling a trigger. They just happen to have a gun over their shoulder. They want to talk. They want to be heard. They have grievances. I don't see any difference. I don't see any difference. I see people that are saying, and like, I'm kind of with you, man. You got 100 people all carrying semi-automatic weapons and they've taken over a building. You're not exactly going to storm the Bastille.
Peace reigns over there now, you know, the conversation has started, you know, and I think it's wonderful because I wrote a post on Facebook that like 2 or 3 days later, I was like, you know, you go occupy a public park in New York and you get pepper sprayed by Tony Baloney and get arrested. Right.
Only if you're a teenage girl, Dave.
Right. Exactly. Well, my point was, if you bring a sign to a protest, you get pepper sprayed. You bring a gun and the cops don't even show up. And that's at that time, the third day, the cops weren't even there yet.
I'm sorry, I like it. A, you have the right to carry the gun. Mm-hmm. B, you're not necessarily carrying the. There's not in the see to the left, carrying the gun is an act of aggression, not an act of defense. Mm-hmm. Because they say, oh, they're just looking, you know, they're looking to pull the trigger. And don't get me wrong, there's probably a psycho or two there. There's probably the guy, I want to die, man. Let's go out in a blaze of glory. Boom, boom. You know, there's a psycho or two. There's definitely a trigger puller there. And from what I understand, there's even infighting within that own group. You can expect that.
Hey, hold on a second.
That.
You don't think there's a trigger puller on the other side of that coin either?
Definitely. Of course. Well, we discussed that the whole first hour. You know, the cop that goes, "Oh, yeah, I'm going to pick that guy off," and boom, 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 and I'll blame it. I'll blame it on this, that, and that. So I don't see them carrying guns as an aggressive action. I see them as basically knowing what they're up against. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's why I liked the Second Amendment. Now, if the government wanted to crush us, you know, let's face it, you know, you can have all your bullets and everything. House to house, they get their ass kicked. But, you know, they got tanks and guns and bombs and F-16s and cruise missiles. If they were ever to turn their forces on us, we would never stand a chance because we've seen what we do to other countries.
Right.
And it's not even close.
It would totally be, you are a traitor and part of the Rebel Alliance.
Exactly. Yes. That's
take her away.
That's right.
All right. So here's the deal. Now, you could say to all these bleeding heart liberals that
that statement right there is not going to help us. Okay?
You could say to all the anti-gun people that why do you need a magazine with 15 bullets in it? Well, it's because they have magazines with 15 bullets in it. Could you imagine if we were so the balance of weaponry was so tilted, like we had one shot muskets.
Well, that's what it was. Yeah, 200 years ago, that's exactly what it was. That's exactly what the Second Amendment allowed for. Equal use of force on either side.
I would say that's what I'm saying is radicals on both sides are just god darn stupid. I mean, just stupid, stupid. Mm-hmm. And I would say that liberalism is required to keep balance in the discussion on some points.
Sure.
Because if you keep managing in and keep managing to one side, ultimately you kind of lose the path you're walking on.
Ben, do you know the definition of the word infringed?
Infringed?
Yeah, as in, you know, the someone right to bear arms.
Somebody stepped over. Somebody overstepped the boundary. Somebody overstepped a boundary.
Yeah.
Well, infringed means taken away rights, which is exactly what the other side is doing. You know, every gun law that comes out is infringing
on rights. Dave, I'm talking about in general. I'm not saying this issue.
I'm talking in general, too. There's 20,000 laws in the books for guns, and there shouldn't be.
No. See, look at what you just did.
No, this is not a gun argument. This is an argument. Right. This is an argument about is one protest is equal to the other, even though it's done in a different way.
I'm getting
this
high.
This is why I you know, I have very, you know, you guys know who our friends are. There are very intellectual people on both sides of an argument, and I completely respect all of them. But for some reason, they can't see the other side of that same coin.
Right.
They can't see that this person is on their team. They're just expressing themselves in a different manner, using different terms, and in this case, an apparatus known as a weapon. But they haven't used these weapons. They're simply holding these weapons legally, constitutionally, and they've decided to take their protest. You know, would that crowd fit in at Occupy? Would those police have pepper sprayed if every 10th person at Occupy was legally sporting a weapon? I don't know.
Well, there's actually data that suggests that, because somewhere in Arizona,
I heard it argued.
There was the Minutemen who volunteered to guard the border.
Yes.
They came down with it because Arizona is an open carry state. They came down to wherever Occupy was and made a line in between the cops.
I thought they did that at Ferguson as well.
Well, not the Minutemen.
Okay.
That was Oath Keepers.
Okay.
But and they said, look, we're not taking sides. Like every other guy was opposite shoulder to shoulder. Like one was facing one way, the other one was facing the other way. And it's like, we're not here to judge. We're here to keep the peace. And they did.
I keep looking for that unity in our country where sooner or later, most people on both sides of this, you know, this aisle, this red-blue crap, will start to empathize a little bit with someone else's idea of why, you know, maybe if they just put all their grievances on paper and said, here's what we don't like about the government. Now, on the other side, you know, you got people on the left that a lot of people think government needs, you know, to grow, never mind shrink. So you can't even agree on common sense. How will you ever develop that mojo, that inertia of, like I mentioned in Poland, where they did come together, realizing that they don't, you know, 80-20, they don't always have to agree on anything, but they do agree on the root causes and the root solutions, maybe most of them, not all of them, to these issues. I don't see that, man. I am friends with people on both sides in social media on purpose because I like to see what other people are saying about it. And it was a shame. I was like, hey, I even posted something. I go, you know, these people from Oregon are on your team. You guys don't get it.
Right.
You just don't get it.
Because they brought a gun and they were so well prepared. All they did was ask for snacks.
Right.
Occupy, so Occupy was walking, requesting water, blankets, food. No, just bring snacks.
Well, it's 100 people, not 100,000. Okay.
When you ask that question of me and Dave, the weird thing is that we're both a weird mix of stuff. We're both, like, I'm half libertarian and half federalist, and he's half libertarian and half anarchist. Yeah. So it's like, it's really a weird mix. And if you ask either one of us, I don't know if you're going to really get the populist answer.
Well, it's, again, rhetorical questions, because what I'm trying to figure out here is if, you know, if there was a Ron Paul or a Gary, what's his name?
Johnson.
Gary. I always want to call him Gary Anderson, the kicker for the Vikings.
Gary Johnson.
Gary Johnson. Jill Stein.
The most vetoing governor in U.S. history, by the way.
If enough of those people existed where they could, you know, sit together, but it seems like everyone has their playbook. This is my world. This is my playbook. I find it discouraging when intelligent, articulate people are already criticizing a protest because it's not the way they do it.
Right.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. They look, if they have someone else that's very similar to them, but the first thing they do is point out what's different about the other guy and why they're wrong and they're right.
Right. Cynthia came down.
What is wrong and what is right?
And I'm like, really? You protest all the time.
I'm not mentioning Cynthia, but I am hinting yes. That, you know, well, I admire her. She's a very articulate, intelligent person. But she leans left, and suddenly if someone has a gun on their hip, then no, I can't back that person.
Yeah, but she tried to get back her right to carry.
Yeah, she's not anti-gun.
Yeah, she's not.
So I just think she thinks it's the same thing as the Bundy Ranch incident. It's totally not.
Do you think it's the spin? No, yeah, I was just going to ask you that. Do you think it's the spin media puts on what the real reason that 100 or 150 people are doing what they're doing?
100%.
I think she uses it as a gateway profile to certain people that are going to start saying Fox News shit at her. That's what I think. And I think that 9 times out of 10 on Long Island, she's right.
Man, so opinions are, it's true. Opinions are localized.
All right.
You know, so, if you live in a certain world, you're not living on a, 10,000 acre ranch. It's not the same.
And I say that
your worlds
Long
are not
Island,
the same.
You know,
your worlds are
liberal.
Not the same. Yeah.
And right, you know what I mean? So in a very liberal area, if somebody starts talking to her about a gun all of a sudden in that area specifically, yes, okay, it is definitely a stereotype or, prejudicial piece of information. But a lot of the people in her region, if they start bitching and spouting off about, damn, the Second Amendment out of nowhere to her as the first part of a conversation, she already knows that I was watching Bill O'Reilly or Hannity the other day. And
it's
all
like
of a
built-in
sudden,
reflex.
Right.
It's like a built-in reflex.
So I think that's where that comes from. I don't, you know what I mean? Down here, it's different. People down here are way, I never thought that I would feel differently than I did when I grew up there, because it was so liberal and we were taught that guns were bad, literally, by everybody.
I grew up in the same environment. Environment.
Then you move
down here.
But down
here, you have so much more conscientious discussion about it where it's not the same. There are people down here that say, I hate Fox News, but I fully support the Second Amendment. And when I say that, I'm picking on Fox News, obviously, but I'm myself already.
The government ruled that Fox News could legally lie to you.
Yeah.
That was a great story. Yeah, but see, I'm not a gun owner, but I absolutely support Second Amendment rights. And it's not because I think suddenly, the king's going to send the troops over and we're going to see some type of crackdown. But the moment you lose a right, there's a good chance you're never going to get it back. And it's just this incremental thing. And now I see the gun conversation. Now, some of that is just a hyperbole that sells weapons. Bullet sales go through the roof. Oh, DHS just bought 2 million rounds or whatever it is.
Yep.
You know, what do people do? They go out and buy weapons. Right. They go out and buy more guns.
Yep. Well, fear index goes up.
Exactly.
Someone's, gun sales go up.
Cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. Somebody's making money. That's a separate issue. I'm talking about someone who has the right to bear arms, and they've decided to protest. And meanwhile, while they're protesting, they've decided to shoulder that rifle. They don't pull it out. They don't aim it at someone. Even when they carry it, they pointed it at the ground. It's safetied. They know what they're doing. The whole, but all of that doesn't matter. Or I'm sorry, all of their protest, all of their issues, all of their disdain and disgust with the government, none of that fucking matters because they have a gun.
Right.
And that's, I can't figure that out. And then I started to realize this is the beautiful work of the media, the divide and conquer mentality at its best, where so many people in this country, I have friends that are pro GMO, a couple. I have most of them that are anti.
I have no problem with GMO most of the time, by the way.
I'm a guinea pig. They haven't been around more than 20 years, so I don't know if they're
I'm
safe.
I'm not necessarily pro-GMO.
Give me two or three generations of GMO consumption before, you know, the third eye grows on my forehead. Then we'll talk.
Or I
go sterile, or I get tumors. Or, you know, we were only looking at one generation of consumption of this at the microbiology level. We don't know what it's going to do to our DNA yet. We have no idea. So I'm more like, I'm weary of it, but at the same time, I don't want to sit there and say, you know, I'm not black and white. It's very, very seldomly am I black and white on issues unless it's obvious. So GMO I used as a reason. Vaccinations, who have lots of family and friends that we know that are choosing not to vaccinate their children, and they're, you know, having to jump through circus hoops just to put their kid in a preschool, versus all the other people that think they're paranoid and nervous and they, you know, they don't want to play by the rules, and my kid can't go to school because you don't want to vaccinate, you know, measles vaccine, blah, 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 blah. You know what? That's healthy. That's a good, healthy argument. I'm glad it's taking place. But the whole idea is when it comes to this, these people, specifically in Oregon, and what they're doing and how they're doing it is, to me, only slightly different than Occupy. Occupy was a bunch of people sitting around playing guitars and singing. These guys are sitting around talking on their walkie-talkies and going, hey, anybody got any Twinkies? Okay. They're still at the root of what they're doing, exercising their First Amendment right.
Non-violently.
Yes. And how is that wrong? I mean, don't get me wrong. If they're dodging taxes, and it, like I said, there's usually a subtext to what's going on a lot of the times. But that's the same thing that motivated people to go to Occupy. My grandfather lost his house. He's down in Manhattan right now with my grandmother. They're holding signs up. Oh, yeah, I can't get a job. My student debt is burying me. I'm going to Occupy. People have a reason why they become involved. Well, the same thing happens in Oregon. You know, it might be mineral rights. It might be, you know, there was a fire line. These people burned some property. You know, I read about it, and I said, that's all there is? Why are so many people attacking these people, you know, 2 days, 3 days into this event, when who knows if this doesn't become, I don't think it'll become the pivotal event, but it could be a standoff that does last a while. And it's no longer a joke. And now people start, like Ferris, you both said, it is bringing the conversation to more fucking people. And to me, that's all that matters. I've said that about Ron Paul when he was running. I say it about Bernie Sanders. Please give me more opinions. Please give me more attitude. Where people are coming from different venues and trying to get, you know, what do you think a Congress is supposed to be? It's supposed to be a bunch of people sitting in a room that aren't necessarily going to agree, but they've come to the conclusion that working together is far better than not working together at all.
Yeah, but see, if you, part of the problem is working together. When you're working together in government, you're actually working to take somebody else's freedom away.
Okay, I get it. I'm talking about is, let's say Congress in its purest form, in what it should be, in a true republic. I'm not talking about what they're accomplishing now. I'm talking about when, you know, people that don't necessarily agree on a topic will sit there and go, you know what, I'm going to vote for you. Not because I want your vote on mine next time around, but because I can see your plight from my side of the fence. I don't see that. I don't see that at all. Dave, I know what our government's up to.
No, right? What my point was that if there was none of these problems in the way, you wouldn't have to pair together to do these things. You could actually go live life and
okay,
pursue
again,
happiness.
You're stating the obvious. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the real world where people don't agree, and what will it take for someone on the left to actually go over and hold the hand of someone on the right or vice versa, or libertarians and anarchists and progressives and centrists. And, you both identify as slightly two different things combined. I kind of go agnostic because if I think something's a good idea, I don't care where it comes from. I'm in love with the idea of something. I don't care if it came from the left. I don't care if it came from the right. What I care about is it going to make for the, is it going to create an improvement for the majority? Well, that's all I care about.
I don't think so, because Ben and I had this conversation last Friday. I don't think anyone's willing to compromise anymore.
That's what it feels like.
And they fight to fight. This country just loves to have conflict. And I don't think anybody's willing to bend at this point. Because I thought to myself, I'm an open borders kind of guy. But yeah, there is some stuff going on there. Hey, let's close the borders for 18 months. We'll have a sunset on it that, has to be re-voted on, or, you have to take it to the whatever. It sunsets. You can't extend it without voting, the whole country voting, right? But, I'll give you that. But you know what you got to give me? You got to take the troops out of those same countries that we're preventing from coming over here.
Yeah.
And I think if both sides does that, what's going to happen? I think everybody's going to be much happier for a little while, because then we're going to realize, it really is us meddling in their business over there with our guns,
If you're a multinational corporation and you want cheap labor, you let in 20 million Mexicans into this country. That's what you do.
Yeah,
that's exactly
true.
How you do it. And again, that's above our politicians. This is the true people that run the country. You guys, I'm preaching the choir here. You guys know this stuff. But that's why there's an immigration issue. It's not because we don't have enough guards or a bigger fence. It's because the people that want – in other words, if I'm a white guy with a high school education and I'm making 10 bucks an hour doing whatever, and they bring in some imported version of me and he's willing to do it for $8, well, then now I got to work for $8. That's what they're doing. That's how you keep the price low. You flood the marketplace with more workers than you possibly need, and that's how you keep cheap labor. That's what's being done. The question is it something we can shut off with a fence or border patrols or, literally like, when people had to come over and they had to go to what's the island there where the Statue of Liberty has been?
Liberty Island. No.
No. Where you had to go through and register.
Ellis Island.
Where we at least tried to keep a decent track on who was coming here, what they were doing. It was all paper records and stuff. And I'm sure everybody slipped through the sieve. But what we see now is, we don't see a ton of Canadians coming over the border, do we? We see a bunch of starving, poor, horrific people living in squalor in Mexico that are willing to uproot whatever roots they did have, come to a strange place because that is better than where they're at. That's what creates it. And like you said, Dave, and I know you're making a reference to Syria specifically, right? With immigrants pouring into Europe because we bombed the shit out of them. Now there's an immigrant issue in Europe, but the cause and effect. This cause in our country is just large conglomerates that want to have a bunch of people that don't even speak English that are willing to work for $6 or $8 an hour.
One of the benefits, and another benefit is that most of the time these guys get fake Social Security numbers and they actually pay taxes. Most people don't realize that, and they can't actually cash in on their benefits.
Most of them send their money back to their house where there's 8 people living in some squalor. They're not here because they're adventurous. They're here because they're desperate.
Yeah, let them in, man. They want to do stuff that we don't want to. So you know what? Sure, I like having a cheap orange because Jose picked it for me, and he works his ass off in that weather.
Well, Stanhope says if you lose to a job who can't speak English, you lose your job to a guy who can't speak English and doesn't know his way around town. Then what does that say about you?
Right. What does it say about your job?
What does it say about your skill set? You don't have much of a skill set if you're losing your job to a Spanish-speaking immigrant.
Yep.
You know what I mean? If you notice tonight's theme was a little bit about protest, a little bit about Is there hope? Is there a chance for us to have enough people get involved? And if you look at all the separate groups, I mean, there's just thousands of them. Now, they're all splinters of bigger groups or bigger sides of the liberal side or the conservative side or whatever. Can you imagine somehow that all the leaders of those groups all sit in the same room and go, you know what? We need mojo. I'm going to back your gun-toting protest because, you know what? In the end, with me and you and that person, we might actually achieve a little bit of change. You apply enough pressure and you might actually, you know, reverse, not maybe reverse the process, but at least slow this shit down. I mean, this, you know, this is not the shit I expected to grow up in. I didn't expect drones and I didn't expect cameras on every street and I didn't expect license plate reading cars, and I certainly didn't expect to get hassled because I was fishing in some lake with my dog sitting next to me. You know, the whole idea that the whole device, if people can't see it, you guys can see it. You can see what that police system is set up to do. It's certainly designed to protect the rich. It's certainly designed to protect Wall Street. It's certainly designed to, you know, and I don't want to stop everything that's going on and create chaos. But let's face it, we're looking at an incremental, this is what Naomi Wolf calls it, an incremental closing down of a society. Okay, she doesn't call it a fascist takeover. She doesn't use those big words. She does compare a lot of the same 10 steps that took place with Mussolini and Hitler and Mao. And she uses a couple other examples to what's happened here in America over the last 10 to 15 years. And it is the exact same thing. Okay, we don't have tanks coming down the street, and we don't have firing squads, and we don't have gas chambers, but we do have the beginning steps of, if there ever was a, you know, a lot of people argue all the way back 200 years ago that we've never truly been a republic. We've always been under the watch of the king and the Bank of England and all that shit. I get that. But what I'm talking about is that our country for a while was spiraling upwards. More opportunities, more chances, more healthy competition, good competition. I don't see any of that. All I see is, you know, six companies own the media, four companies own the oil, six companies run the banking institutions. I don't see it going, you know, spiraling upward. I see it contracting and contracting like a slow turning of a vice. And it doesn't mean tomorrow I'm going to get my head cracked by some cop. But I'll tell you what, guys, and I want to thank you both. I'll let you, you know, end it with a closing statement here. It's something I'm nervous about for my daughter, not for me. I don't think it'll get brutal while I'm still alive, but it could get pretty bad in the next 20 years or 30 years, unless there's private industry that turns it around. Maybe a trigger event, you know, maybe a nuke goes off on the planet somewhere, and then finally people say enough is enough. And you see worldwide protests. I don't know what that event will be. Maybe it'll be one event. Maybe it'll be a couple. But I do see what we're doing and a lot of people as not benign, but not as
disenfranchised.
I'm a little discouraged. It's like I watch the arguments happen online and I see so many people with lots of cool ideas and different people. I like that, but it's been 10 years, and all I see is I haven't seen one other than cannabis. I think we're starting to see that get reversed. Hey, thank you to both of you guys. You know, I got, real quick, working at Beasley Radio, doing some part-time music. It's fun again. I don't know if that'll lead to anything. I'm not even holding my breath. I don't really care. I just want to do a little terrestrial radio, and I don't talk too much about Kelly. But I have this really amazing woman in my life now. And, you know, I want a private life. I don't need to talk about my entire life. But things are kind of turning around for me. And I'm due. I deserve it. Mm-hmm. But I also wanted to reach out to you guys, not just you two, but, you know, the other guys that I'll have on this program as well. Is I've learned a lot. I really have. I mean, I learned a lot from Dave. You know, he's well informed. Ferris is very informed, and other people are. And it's just been a great ride, guys. You know, maybe once every 6 weeks we can do this. I don't want to overburden you with that, but I do love a good conversation. And you know, just from the responses I'm getting here on Facebook and Twitter, I think people really enjoy that. Sometimes it gets a little complicated and stuff goes over my head. Like when Ferris talks money and markets and countries, I can't necessarily say I know exactly what he's talking about, but I can grasp a concept here or there.
Right.
But you know what? Knowledge is power. I am a firm believer of that. I really am. I don't know when that's going to equate to a good ripple of change in not just our country, but worldwide, because these revolutions will be worldwide. Obviously, we know.
Yeah.
And I also think, this idea of this new world order is a bunch of old farts that had a dream decades ago. And every time a new player comes into the midst, that's why I like the documentary Billions for Change. It's a billionaire that wants to make the world better, not own it and not control it. I think that maybe, you know, the Elon Musks of the world might possibly not be our savior, but, you know, be a safety valve. So thank you to guys. Ferris, final thoughts. What's going on? What do you think?
Well, I just think, thanks for having me, first of all. It's always a pleasure. We're going to have to get together off campus sometime soon as well.
Yeah, a little playoff football or something.
Definitely. I just saw your friend Paulie Sunday. So
where'd you see him?
Golf tournament.
Oh, that's right. He played with
charity golf.
Was he in your foursome? No, he sponsored a hole.
No. Yeah, he sponsored another hole, but I was sitting at his
table
hole? For the dinner.
Did he sponsor your hole?
Not my hole, okay. But somebody's hole.
Okay.
But he was saying we got to go out for a couple barley pops at Wing House or something.
For sure.
But I just want to say, like, I think that there's such a spin job and a smear campaign against true knowledge and learning in this country that ultimately it's going to be shaken loose and people are going to be able to discern truth from bullshit at some point. Maybe they're not going to be perfect at it, but I think the idea of what people think this country is may not be what they think it is either. And when I say that, I mean on both wings, all the way from the liberal bleeding heart socialist that thinks that the government in this country has always been here to take care of everybody. Mm-hmm. That's really not the case if you read our history. And the people all the way on the left that think that it's the Wild West, not quite. You know what I mean? It's somewhere in the middle. I just wish that the media and the learning and the periodicals out there were a little more like not political about every little thing.
Yeah.
Because it's always a spin to try to lure somebody to a way of thinking rather than, hey, this book is blue.
Yeah. Dave, what do you think?
I want to say that I love doing this show with the two of you guys because we did 3 hours of intellectual conversation and laughed because we all laughed because of a joke about a hole.
Yeah. you know what I equate that to now? I call it the 8-year-old that lives in my head.
Yeah.
Yes. But I got an 8-year-old in my head, and if there's a fart joke, he'll find it.
Yep. We're dudes. He never goes away.
That's right. I think we got a ways to go. And the reason I say that is because I belong to different groups. I know as well as you guys do. And there's so much infighting within their own groups. I mean, just the Libertarian Party. They can't seem, you know, every time someone, you know, one of the more brainiacs that starts to rise, then you see that own person's agenda. And then there's infighting and then they're attacked from their own. It's, I see that with people that are spiritual in nature. I see that people are discussing things like psychedelics. I see all the different topics where there is still a lot of infighting, and it kind of bums me out. But then I realize that's the process at work. That's how it happens. That's what a Congress would sound like. You know, I disagree. Here's why. Now I've made my point. I will ponder what you have said to me. Right. Hopefully you will ponder what I've said to you. And, you know, we only used the word compromise once tonight. I'm not sure which one of you guys used it. Until we can get to that point, we're not going anywhere. And you know what? I think this lady says it best. Check her out.
My friend came to the door. She said, I was on the phone cooking me and my baby some breakfast. And she said, hey, something wrong is popping. I said, what? She said, yeah. I said, no. So the girl come downstairs. She come out her apartment with her baby with no shoes on. I said, oh, girl, it's cold outside. She said, something ain't right. I said, oh, man. She said, oh, man, the building is on fire. I said, no, what? I got my three kids and we bounced out. We ain't gonna be in no fire. Not today.
That is the new Ain't Nobody Got Time For That. She's not as good at it. She's not as good at it, but
have you seen it, Ben?
I have not. Can I just ask one final conspiracy question real quick? Because I forgot to ask you earlier and it's a real quick one.
What's up?
Is Sean Penn CIA?
Well, first of all, I had no idea. But you know what? Now, you know, when you ask a question like that, first of all, why are you asking? I don't know why you're asking.
El Chapo, he was on the ground in Haiti. He's been down in South America filming movies, quote unquote, all the time. He's always doing these UN pieces where he's traveling overseas.
All right. So was he always that way, or was he?
Well, since Falcon and the Snowman.
Oh, yeah. That was a good movie. Enough. You're right. Was that Timothy Hutton? Timothy Hutton was in that.
Yeah. He was also in the Valerie Plame movie. I forget what the name of it was.
So right. what makes... Does he become an actor who's recruited, or is he recruited and they put him in as an actor?
Well, you gotta ask yourself, why the hell is he interviewing this guy? But
he's always there. You know what I'm saying? Like globally, he's always there.
Yeah.
It just seems like he's in somewhere. And I think he was an actor that was recruited.
I think it's an interesting point of view.
Yeah. I think he's CIA. I really do.
All right, guys. You guys have a good one. Ferris, why don't we get together and watch? I don't know. I'm thinking some type of NFL playoff action.
I'll be around.
You going to be around or are you traveling?
I am here all weekend.
Dave, have you ever watched a football game on purpose?
I've been to a couple Super Bowl parties, but I only watched in the last 5 minutes. And I was actually at one football game, which is the Bucks? I don't know, about 10 years ago. And I was asking questions the whole time. What does that mean? What is that? What is that?
Well, yeah, but that's pretty cool. You actually went to an actual football game.
Yeah, I've been to baseball games when I was younger, and I also went to a hockey game here, and I actually rather liked hockey.
Oh, hockey's great live.
Yeah.
Football's okay live. Baseball's boring as shit live. NBA's great live. But I'm not an NBA fan. But, yeah, the best live sport to watch is hockey. Absolutely. You don't even have to know what the hell's going on.
And you'll have a good time.
All right, guys. You guys have a great night. Thank you. The reason,
thanks, Ledge.
Yeah, thank you, guys. And the reason I'm a big fan of what Dangerous Conversation stands for and what guys like that stand for is you get a room full of people that have an opinion and at least a wee bit of knowledge about a topic, by the time you leave that room, there's a good chance you've done two things. You've maybe taught somebody something, and you have probably, if you're a good listener, definitely learned something. And that's what the internet still gives us. That's why I have hope. I don't have hope that things are going to turn around tomorrow, to be honest with you. I don't see it. But that's why I like a Bernie Sanders. Throw in a game shaker. Throw in something that's going to mess it up a little bit. Throw in some of that they didn't expect. That's not part of the plan. That's why I like him. Doesn't mean I agree with much of what he talks about. I don't. I didn't agree with everything Ron Paul had to say. Okay? He's anti-abortion. Okay? I don't necessarily have to agree with it, anything or with the majority of something to learn from somebody or have that somebody teach the masses about something they need to know. So when Bernie starts talking about banking, maybe, even though someone hates him, he's a socialist. You know what? Maybe at the end of that 2-minute video you watch, you actually learn something. And I think I think Ferris was right. I think it won't be my generation or those two guys' generation. It'll be the next generation where something happens. Maybe it bottoms out. Maybe it gets bad. But the positive change that is coming to not just us, not just our country, but to the world, it's going to take a little. And the best thing you can do is learn shit and spread it. Spread your shit. You guys have a great night, and I will talk to you next week. See you.